we got a good military and we can take down governments. And he said, I guess if the only tool you have is a hammer, every problem has to look like a nail. He said, I just got this down from upstairs, meaning the Secretary of Defense's office today, and he said, this is a memo that describes how we're going to take out 7 countries in 5 years, starting with Iraq and then Syria, Lebanon, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, and finishing off Iran.
Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours. Saturday, December 26, 2020. Thank you for being here today. We're going to go over some foreign policy to begin because I find it to be one of the most important things that is not being talked about that really gets under my skin, as you probably know if you watch this show for a while, which is the fact that Israel bombed Syria and Gaza on Christmas like it has every year for at least the last 3-4 years that I can remember, but pretty much does it every time. Nobody seems to care about that, despite the fact that it being targeted at Christians on Christmas, and this country being the one of the prime supporters of that government that does that thing every year. It just blows your mind. We're going to talk about that to begin. We're going to follow that by the discussion of Nashville and what happened there and my thoughts on it. You know, there's a lot going on there that's important to discuss, if not simply because everybody is talking about it, looking at it. I want to make sure I give my thoughts on it, but I don't think it is as important as people are making it. And you'll see what I mean by that. Not to say that it's not sad and dangerous. It's all, you know, everyone's always jumping on your comments these days. If I say it's not the end-all, be-all, terrible thing, they think I mean that it's not important. Not what I said. But there's something going on with this story, and I want to dig into it a little bit. But of course, then we're going to go over for the latter half, the COVID illusion, and all the things that entailed there. Now, I might actually break this show up tomorrow to restream it as 2 separate shows, because likely people that don't want to listen to the Israel part won't wait until the latter half of the show to hear the COVID part, and they're both equally important. But let's get into it, because it might not be a short show. Big surprise, right? But there's a lot to get into. So let's start off with the discussion of the recent bombings, which are hard to listen to, talk about, think about. Israel just bombed Gaza on Christmas, just like every year. A children's hospital, no less. The international community is silent. Any U.S. politician who supports Israel is a hypocrite. Merry Christmas. Of course, it was deleted in here. I forget why, or maybe it was removed. Here is Robert Inlakesh's follow-up tweet with the same information. Gaza under attack. Massive airstrikes pound areas throughout Gaza. 2 injuries being targeted at... This was in the moment, remember. I think it's been followed up with more than that, but treated at the Shifa Hospital, civilian homes damaged, children's hospital struck. Now, the Israeli government, of course, is arguing that that was things they bombed that then exploded and then hit that, which, by the way, pretty sure would still make it their fault, but who cares, right? Facts and, you know, typical situations and international norms do mean nothing in regard to Israel alone by itself. Everybody else, though, normal rules apply, except Israel, which, of course, is the government we're talking about. Despite the fact that people want to make the obvious, ridiculously clear comment that they just did something illegal out to be racist. And that's just about the dumbest thing I could think of any point in my life. It's just ridiculous that we can continue to see this. And there's plenty of people out there that are probably, whatever you want to call them, that believe what I'm saying in regard to the government and what's happening, but also have racist feelings about different people. That doesn't mean that everybody who points out the crimes of a government, in this case Israel, is in fact racist. That's an ignorant fallacy. As usual, when it comes down to things like this, they're trying to cover up. But if you want to take a look really quickly at Robert's stream, or his Twitter page, the reason I'm showing you this is so that I hope you will continue to do so going forward, because he is always on this and has extensive sources in many locations, including Gaza and Syria and places that the mainstream media don't, that they simply get handed down parroted talking points from the government that's responsible for the crimes, because that's journalism today. But here's Robert letting you know what's going on. 6 huge explosions heard in northeastern Gaza. This is before anybody's reporting on this. Then it gets to the point to where he's get confirmation from people on the ground. We know that Israel has... What I want to point out, first of all, is this Robert breaking the story before it's even being pushed out in the mainstream, if at all, by the way. Nothing in the Western press I can find. Other than independent media, that is. But he's telling you this stuff before it's being acknowledged as Israel. And, of course, even underneath these comments, you're getting people that are attacking him for claiming it's Israel. But, of course, we now know it was, in fact, Israel. That's only because we talk about the concept of these rockets, which we'll get into next. Just disgusting. And here's another one, just to add to it. Israel opened fire today on farmers east of this refugee camp. Right, because, and that's, you know, just again, fighting these evil terrorist Palestinians that are locked in a certain area, aren't allowed to leave, have controlled electricity and water and so on. But it's all their fault. It's their fault that Israel attacked a bunch of refugees in a camp. But, you know, let's just keep moving forward and keep an open mind, right? IDF rejects Hamas claim it hit hospital. Cites secondary blast from arms. Again, that's just a really ridiculous claim, seeing as how their bombing is what made that happen. Now, are we going to pretend like Hamas or anybody in this area having munitions to defend themselves is somehow, excuse me, as I hit my microphone, is somehow a suspect concept? It's the same reason that if Iran simply buys a weapon, suddenly that's a big terrorist act, because the U.S. government claims that they're doing bad things with them without proving anything. Every single country, and I would argue Palestine in my mind, regardless of what Israel wants to lie about, has the right to defend itself in regard to buying munitions and so on. Now, Israel regularly throws out the idea of having its right to defend itself after it attacks somebody. When you attack somebody as you claim they're about to do something, that is not defense. This is the Bethlehem Doctrine. This is what was responsible for the Soleimani assassination, because they claimed that they said he was about to do something. Why? Because Israel's government told the U.S. that he was about to do something. It was all a lie. They tricked him. They lied to him. It was a diplomatic mission. They murdered him in an Iraqi airport. The point is that when you're talking about somebody like this, boiling it down to the simple idea that because they had an arms stash, that makes it their fault, is just, there's nowhere else in the world this kind of logic applies. They are a subjugated people in a location from which they are not allowed to leave. We're talking about Gaza, understand. 97% undrinkable water, 52% children, all of which are constantly under the yoke of the Israeli government. And yet every single thing that happens as they're bombed inside of a barrel becomes their fault. And here's the thing I want to make sure everybody understands, and I should have said this right off the bat. This is what I keep saying, and I've just said right now, even if every single thing that Israel is saying about Gaza, about Hamas specifically, or just the Palestinians, if every single thing they said was true, rockets flying and so on and so on, it still would be justified. You know why? Because Palestine has the right to response in regard to their occupation. That is from the United Nations. The United Nations has repeatedly stated it's occupied territory, which means by the rules of law, of rules of war, they have a right to defend and respond. Yet when they fire a rocket, suddenly that's, and by the way, that's not even being proven. It's the claim of a rocket being fired. We'll get to that in a minute. But even if they had fired that rocket, they're in occupied territory. And the UN has always maintained that Israel is illegally occupying, as well as the Golan Heights. But all these things don't matter because the U.S. government doesn't care. But so if they're in occupied territory, which they are, and if the UN continues to say that they are, which they are, and they're doing so, they have the right to do what they're doing, is to fight back, to respond. And in regard, even if it was I wouldn't call it a first strike, because obviously there's been a lot going back and forth for a long time. But let's just say nothing had happened for weeks and Palestine did fire a rocket. That would be allowed under the current situation, according to the United Nations. None of this seems to matter, understand. But see, that is not even what I think really happened. I just want to make sure you understand that even if what they say is correct, they're still in the right in regard to actual international law. But we know that Israel, the United States, and these governments don't care about international law, which is why they routinely ignore United Nations resolutions, yet point to them when they want to. But let's dig into this and show you why this is always a suspect story. Understand that you will not find video of these rockets. And by the way, they're not, what we're finding out now is we're being told that these are rockets as well as balloons. This is responding to Gaza rocket fire is on Israel. Army says it hit rocket manufacturing facility and saw secondary explosions, which are suspected of causing the damage to nearby hospital.
Now, of course, see, what's funny is this thing has continued to refresh. They changed the headline three times so far that I can tell. I don't even know why I highlight this anymore, because they constantly update and change it. This is not journalism, right? If you have an outlet like this and you're changing anything after your first publication, you're obligated to put something somewhere that says, hey, we changed this. Here's what we altered. We updated this. We changed this title. This was incorrect. Never will you see that here. Every time I make this point every time, and there's a reason for that, because they want to continue to control the narrative, even real time. So they're not journalists, they're propagandists. Now, what's important to understand is what they're telling you is Hamas denounced what they called the barbaric overnight strikes of the Israeli Defense Forces in response to, they claim, to rocket fire from Gaza. That's not what they said, but see, they want to make it sound like that's what Hamas said, but that's not what it said. That's what Israel, Times of Israel, inserted into there. And by the way, that's also supposed to be notated, but they don't do that because they're not trying to give you the truth. It says that is said damage. Damaged a children's hospital in the Palestinian enclave. The Israeli military flatly denied it. Now, what's funny is you can't deny doing it and then say, but it was because of us that that exploded and hit it. That's not denying doing it. That's just saying that because some, that, you know, if I were to push you into somebody and you knock them down and broke their arm, that would be my fault. It's not the person's fault that fell into them. Just because I push them into them. It's just childish logic. This doesn't apply anywhere else in the world. The IDF said it struck three Hamas targets. Now, this is always what I point out. So we have, let's just jump down here real quick so you can see the what they always bury. On Friday evening, two rockets fired from Gaza were shot down by the Iron Dome anti-missile system. There were no reports of injuries or damage. Every single time. Literally every single time. Every single time. They have claims of rockets. Nothing happens with sirens. And a couple of fireworks are shot in the sky, which I see video of every single time. I see Iron Dome pop things in the sky. There's no trail of smoke from a rocket. There's nothing. We just see a trail from the supposed Iron Dome popping some fireworks in the sky. And as I always point out, the leading munitions expert in Israel has repeatedly stated that that is just a fireworks show. But no one wants to talk about that. I've covered that twice, in fact, on my show. That's not to say that it's absolutely a fact. I'm just saying that's what he said, and he's an expert. It seems interesting that nobody wants to point that out. But why is it that every time we have rock, I mean, this is the point that I always make. If we're actually claiming this is Hamas, do you really believe that Hamas, knowing that every time they fire rockets that cause no damage or injury and land in a field, that every time they do it, Israel bombs 13, I mean, in this case, I was probably, what did it say, five sites, four sites? Stuck three this time, so they're claiming anyway. But so they know that Israel's going to attack what they're claiming are strategically important parts. So why would Hamas do that and intentionally use rockets that have no guidance, that they know that, I mean, 99.9% of the time do this? No injury, no damage. So it seems like either the most ridiculous thing you could possibly imagine any force would ever do, continually poke the eye of a bear and allow them to continue to maul you every single time you do it, or, just a thought here, this is an excuse used to justify continued agendas by the Israeli government of the continued openly stated goal of taking this territory. Gee, what sounds more likely to you? Now, those are just hypothetical conversations, but the point that this is, like, outrageous, that we could argue that that's not happening, it just shows you how dishonest the media is, or whatever you want, however you want to say it. At the end of the day, there's no evidence these rockets are being fired, and by the time we hear of rockets being fired, Israel has already attacked Gaza. And by the way, on top of that, there's no evidence, even if there were rockets, that Hamas is responsible. So they're just blindly going after Gaza because they say Hamas, and they'll even say right up here that Hamas is responsible for, they say this every time. For those that haven't seen me cover this in a while, it's like the same cookie cutter story every damn time. Hamas is responsible for whatever happens, no matter what. That's what Israel continues to say. God, you know, it's almost like, I know it's in there. I'm going to read through it in a second. But if you can just argue that Hamas is responsible for the bombing, even if you haven't proven Hamas is responsible, and then go on to bomb Hamas sites, and every single time that happens, at what point does somebody who wants Gaza to continue to get bombed say, hey, here's an idea. Let's just continue to step in here and do this so they'll guaranteed bomb Hamas without any investigation, without any due diligence, without any legal process? Again, does this sound like the only democracy in the Middle East? And do not forget, back to the beginning point, these people are not allowed to leave. If you pretend like they're the ones that are responsible, then you should be able to say, then leave then. Go somewhere else. But they're not allowed to. They don't even have that option in Gaza. They're in an open-air prison. So how in the world can any honest person argue that everything that's happening is their fault? Even if they're firing rockets, again, it's justified under the rules of war. But again, we could circle around this forever. All you're going to get is sycophant people who are going to defend Israel no matter what happens. Going forward, it says they struck these three targets, and they're claiming they were military posts. Now, first of all, remember, I'm getting I'm getting conflicting reports from the very beginning from people on the ground that these are balloons, and this is coming from the Israeli side, not rockets. But even that is being completely kind of conflated between people arguing this narrative. I think that's because there's nothing that really happened. Because we're just saying, whatever, kite, balloon, rocket, they did something. Now we're going to bomb 14 sites in Gaza. All these people that are screaming at us about how Gaza fired first, go ahead and send me the video then. I'd love to see it. Shoot over the video when you get a chance. I won't hold my breath because they're parroting what they were told. Now it says, Gaza's Hamas ruler said in a statement the strike on the site, which was also located next to a Pepsi factory, had damaged a nearby children's hospital and a center for people with special needs. Right? These are the classic concept. This is exactly what Israel would target and has in the past. Why? Because this is why they attack the power plant. This is why they continue to drive Gaza into chaos. This is what they do. I mean, and while I'm saying this, I want to make sure I point this out, that this is a great article that Robert just wrote about this exact topic. This was, and by the way, I posted this the morning of Christmas, and that later that night is when Israel did both of these things, right? It's called Gaza is unlivable and Israel's about to make it even worse. And sure enough, he was right. For plenty of other reasons as well. But the point is that the UN has speculated that Gaza would be unlivable by 2020 for 8 years now. So the Guardian's written about it. Everyone seems to go, Gaza will be unlivable by the time we're currently living in. But they haven't wanted to point it out since we got here. Years ago, and now it's just silence. As 97% of their water is undrinkable, with 52% children, 70% unemployment for adolescents. This is obscene, and everything is blamed on them as they continue to bomb this area with 52% children. The most densely civilian populated area on the planet. Secondary explosions, they said, though. Right. So anybody want to point that way? So if they did attack munitions and those exploded and then hurt a children's hospital, whose fault is that? Of course, what they want to say is, well, because Hamas deliberately places military targets in the heart of densely populated areas. Oh, you mean the area which they can't leave? The densely populated Gaza area that you trap them in, that they can't leave from, which you restrict their water and their electricity and control. Yeah, it's their fault, though, right? It's context, guys. They pretty much have no other place to put anything because it is a densely populated area they're trapped in. I guess that's just ridiculous. I mean, it drives me crazy that people make these arguments and you get into these back and forth with people and they just don't, it's not about the facts. The truth doesn't play into it. It's politics. Of course, the reality though is harming civilians every time. But realize on the other side though, right? We had, what happened again? Oh yeah, the rockets that fired and hit the field and caused no damage and injury every single time. But every single time you have the opposite. Every single time you've got civilians and people dying and actions that hurt the lives of people who are not involved in Hamas or anything else. But just because Hamas bad guy and because we said arbitrarily before anything happened that we were going to blame them and bomb this densely civilian populated area, it blows the mind. Where is the international community? I don't care what the logic is. Look, even if you claim Hamas is responsible and rockets were flying all over the place, what about the 52% children? Why does that not matter in regard to Israel's actions? It would matter anywhere else in the world if it was Iran doing something, if it was Venezuela doing something. If the smallest amount and our countries, our governments would lose their collective minds. But when Israel does it, it doesn't matter what happens. Well, Hamas, okay, well then it's all okay. Anybody out there who does not, that is arguing that this is justified, is a hypocrite. I don't care what your argument is. You cannot continue to allow innocent people to be in the middle of this chaos just because you claim you've got the right to do this. Says who? Defending yourself is not continuing to bomb innocent people. There were no reports of injury or damage, which is always the case. Now, it says here, sirens warning of the incoming rockets blared in several. So this is what always happens, right? So the only reason that everyone's in such a fuss and chaos over there as this thing did hit an open field and caused no damage and didn't hurt anybody is because they're just alarm, sirens and chaos, and everybody's being told. It's all these people have been socially engineered into being fearful of exactly this every single time the siren goes off. And by the way, this is when I argue nothing is even happening. Iron Dome is firing and popping in the sky, and they're setting off alarm sirens. That's just an opinion. Please prove me wrong. Somebody anywhere, please, at any time, send me just one video of one of these rockets that just got fired, allegedly. With all the cell phones in everywhere. I mean, there's all kinds. Look, in Israel is not the same as Gaza. Israel... I would argue there's plenty, probably just as many cell phones in Gaza, but there's cell phones everywhere. And you're telling me that not one person got a cell phone video of a rocket? Do you realize that anything happens anywhere and there's a cell phone filming it? But never this case. How does that make sense? Okay, but see, Israel, they said, well, there's all these people that were treated for shock. And I argue that's probably what their, quote, injuries were that other people report. Oh, there it was. It just refreshed. It just refreshed while you were watching. Good time. Good journalism. Last month, two rockets fired from Gaza. Oh, and guess what they did then? Did they destroy a building? Did they hurt people? Did they cause injuries? Did they kill anybody? Nope. They struck an open field along the coast. No damage, no injury. That's the story every single time. And guess what they did? They fired back and they bombed and they killed people every time. Of course, what you find out here, by the way, it says they were operating the Iron Dome defense system, and they attempted to shoot down the rockets that nobody verified and nobody ever proved even happened at all, and their firing is what caused these projectiles to break off and hit their own areas, causing minor damage. But that's because of the Iron Dome, not because of these rockets that nobody proved that I think didn't even happen. Of course, that's so contentious to even point out, but it just comes down to basic logic here, guys. And at the end of the day, this is what we continue to be confronted with. This is what this guy had to say. Rebel Media Australia. Israel is trending because they retaliated to a Christmas bombardment of rocket fire from Hamas. Right. So the point being is this is happy to just blindly state this with nothing but the statements of the Israeli government. Why? Because clearly he's a really unbiased journalist, right? Clearly. Okay, so the point is that stating this as a fact without actually confirming it and just speaking to a government individual who has an agenda or intentions or whatever, speaking to the people who are involved in the process, that's not journalism. That's propaganda. But sure, just stated as fact. Twitter was quiet when Gaza launched this round of violence. Why? Because there was no one knew it was happening until Israel said, they fired, and look, we already bombed back. Every time. So understand, if this was Twitter being quiet when Gaza was launching rockets, there would be video of this. Twitter wasn't quiet because they didn't want to talk about it. Do you realize how ignorant that is? Like, just the entirety of Twitter was quiet? Yeah, of course. There's hundreds of people, millions of people around the world that would be there on either side that would have shown you something. Israel would have been, look, they're firing rockets at us right now. But yeah, let's believe him, this great journalist, that of course there was just silent. So, he says, if you don't say anything yesterday, please shut up today. Right. Great journalism. Just don't speak about anything. But here's what I had to say about it. You mean that illegally occupied area with 97% drinkable water, 18-hour blackouts, 52% children from which they're not allowed to leave? Yeah, looking forward to calling this out. And they were balloons, facts and all, send over the videos of the attacks when you can. Now, at this point is when there was only reports of balloons. So the point is that at that time it's being stated because that's just the narrative. In any case, guys, however you want to spin this, that is all that really matters. As I said from the beginning, even if he's correct, which I aggressively disagree with, even if he was correct, if you're living in an area that you're not allowed to leave, that's illegally occupied, according to the United Nations, when you barely have any drinking water, 18-hour plus blackouts, and half of your population is children, you have the right to fight back. According to the UN, that's not my opinion. On top of that, there's no evidence that rockets were fired at all. Good job, Avi. Clearly see where that motivate, you know, your unbiased journalism stems to, right? It's horrifying. Now, here's just a comment. Now, this is just an individual online. I can't, you know, confirm this person is actually there. I'm only reading it because this is just a reiteration of what I'm already saying. I have relatives in Gaza, he says, and they say no rockets were fired before Israel's attack. This is, by the way, exactly what our sources on the ground are also saying. They also indicated that this is usually the case. Shocker. Rockets are not nearly as frequent as Israel claims. Now, again, that's a good point because as I continue to point out, I'm not saying they don't have access to rockets. What I'm saying is that the only time I've actually seen evidence of rocket fire is when Hamas, for whatever reason, feels obligated to put on a show of response because the people who elect them are unhappy that Israel's getting away with the attacks with no response. But realize that the Hamas and anybody intelligent is aware that the moment they fire anything before anything has happened is just a green light for Israel to do what it wants to do. But when we saw the last time where they were bombing and bombing and we saw rockets skittering around and really not doing damage but being fired, it was because Israel had already carried out a massive attack on Gaza. But as he says, ergo, airstrikes are not retaliatory, but aggressive. Exactly. The reality, guys, is all you got to do is actually listen and talk. I mean, look, there's ways you can contact people right now. You don't know who you're actually talking to if you're just reaching out via Twitter or whatever else. But that's why you reach out and find people like us. Don't just listen to us. Find somebody else. Listen to Avi if you want to. But listen to everybody and then look at the facts. Just by stating that's not true, this is what Israel said, that's not a fact. That's a regurgitation of a statement. The facts, I believe, are quite clear. We can very clearly see Israel's attacks. We cannot see any evidence of rockets. Now, you could argue that's just because nobody caught it, but that still means you can't state they're 100% a fact until you can prove it, which is what journalists used to do. But don't forget, as they're screaming at us, that that's only Gaza and that's the only reason it happened because Israel would never do that unless they were defending themselves, as they struck Syria on the same night. I'd love to hear Avi talk about that too, right? Because, oh, it's all totally, we'll attack Syria and a specifically Christian area of Syria on Christmas Eve. And that's, you know, totally okay, but they would never attack Gaza without any justification. Of course not. Just the mental gymnastics. Now it says, overnight, Israel jets pounded targets in Gaza in response to what Israel said was rockets coming from Palestine. Hamas will bear the consequences, it said, for all terror. Oh, well, this was actually from the other article. I forgot I didn't end up reading it. But this is their quote from the IDF. As always, Hamas will bear the consequences for all terror emanating from Gaza. Not they have to be responsible. They've said this more specifically. If anything happens, anything, they're going to bomb Gaza. They've said that point blank. The argument being that we're going to hold them all accountable, and so you guys have to make sure Hamas doesn't do this. You know what that's actually called? Like the literal definition of what they're describing? It's called collective punishment. And that is a documented war crime according to the United Nations. Big surprise. Doesn't apply to Israel, though. You can't just arbitrarily bomb an entire area, or I shouldn't say arbitrarily, they're bombing specific targets, but you can't just bomb an area at large wherever you choose because you say you're holding this group responsible, whether or not they're even responsible for the attack. That is literally collective punishment. If Iran did that, the United States government would lose its mind and it would carry out all kinds of propaganda. It would probably carry out an attack. That's why they're gross hypocrites. It doesn't appear there were any deaths. Surprise, surprise. And this is always the case. The Palestinian side is disputing that Israel hit merely Hamas target outposts. They're saying, of course, as I said, it was a children's hospital. Now, this is the part I wanted to read before I get to the Syria part. Israel warplanes fired a series of missiles on Saturday in the eastern, northwestern, and central parts of the Gaza Strip. So again, A couple rockets that caused no damage, didn't hurt anybody, landed in the field, and probably didn't happen at all. Israel then carries on attacks in three different areas of the Gaza Strip. Each one of those areas has civilian people in the most civilian, densely populated area on the planet, including they hit, according to the people in this area, and according to the sources on the ground, open farmland. Which, by the way, guys, this stuff will be confirmed. Robert is going to show you this stuff. But the point is that the media won't touch it, including open farmland, which probably was the point. Because just like they're starving people in Yemen to try to force them to do what they want, they're doing the same thing in Gaza. They wounded a six-year-old girl, easily verifiable, and a man in his 20s. The attacks caused power cuts in the eastern parts of and caused some damage to a children's hospital, a center for disabled people, and shattered the windows of some residential buildings, according to reports. All while they struck a field, caused no damage, caused no injuries. If that even happened. Now, of course, the day before that, Israel attacked Syria in the Hama countryside, which may have killed, according to Israeli media, over six people, or up to six people. Why? Where was the outrage there? Why does Israel have the right to bomb Syria? Because the U.S. government doesn't care. That is illegal. It doesn't matter how you spin it. You're not allowed to just bomb a country because you don't like someone who's present. That's assuming, in fact, even what they're bombing is Iran, which is what their argument is. First of all, Iran is an ally of Syria. Syria invited Iran. They're allowed to be there. Just because the U.S. says, we don't like Syria, doesn't mean you can then just bomb anybody that goes in the country. Like, really think about how childish that is. Of course, what they argue is they're a Syria bad guy. Assad villain, Assad bad guy, right? And of course, he did all these chemical attacks that we're systematically debunking across the years. Duma and all these different examples where you find out later it was in fact the so-called rebels or whoever. I mean, even the United Nations, Della Pontaine, said herself that it was the rebels and the U.S. still pretends it wasn't. Duma has been thoroughly debunked. The U.S. government still pretends it was Assad. This whole thing is an illusion. Now, Iran is allowed to be there because Iran has been defending Syria and Iraq for a long time now from the illegal invasions of the U.S. government and others. That's what they still argue that that's what Iran killed Americans in Iraq. Well, that's because the U.S. government was illegally invading Iraq and Iran was helping Iraq defend its own sovereignty. Now, I'm not saying it's good in any case that anybody died. But my point is, if Iran invaded Florida and the U.S. government fought off Iran, by our U.S. logic, that would make the U.S. government terrorist. Sure makes sense, right? It only applies because that guy, bad guy, we good guy. Real childish logic. But that's not how the world works. According to people like Pompeo and these other Christian Zionists and other manipulated government entities, well, sure, whatever they say goes. But this really actually boils down to an attack on Christianity, as I see it, from the Israeli government, at least in one part, as well as the agendas to take over Syria and everything else. But this isn't a direct attack on Christian communities in Syria. Syria has one of the largest Christian populations in the Middle East. It's either third or fourth, I believe. Most people wouldn't, but most Americans who blindly trust the mainstream wouldn't even know that. They would say, that can't be true. It 100% is. They have a democracy in that country. They've got one of the leading, largest Christian populations in the Middle East. You wouldn't know these things unless you actually pay attention and listen to independent media, in fact. But Israel targeted them and bombed them and potentially killed six people on Christmas Eve. There was widespread anger in Lebanon also. Why? Because Israel, once again, as it always does, which is a huge crime if anybody else does it, illegally violated Lebanese airspace. And in fact, this is reporting, or at least some are reporting, that they possibly carried out these attacks from Lebanon airspace. But it says there was widespread anger in Lebanon, given that just before the attack and what Israel claimed was an Iranian militia, which really is, it's probably just PMU, or if not Iran, just Syrian military for all we know. Four IAF jets flew low over Beirut, startling residents of the city who feared they were come under attack. So every time they scream about how Israelis were so upset because of the rockets and because of the sounds and everything, we'll think about exactly what they're saying here. They did exactly that to Lebanese people. Why is that not the same outrage? Oh, that's right, because Lebanese people aren't as important as Israelis, apparently, according to the media and according to everybody else who talks about it, other than the independent media. It says there was also outrage in the region over the fact that such an aggressive major aerial attack took place on Christmas Eve, as well as that the region struck has Syrian Christian communities in the area. So remember, if every year they do this, And every year they target Christian communities, and every year they bomb Gaza, which, you know, Bethlehem and all, the classic foundational concepts of Christian. How do we not understand what's happening? Then you need to ask yourself why hypocritical Christian Zionists like Mike Pompeo will support the actions of governments like this as they pretend to be righteous Christians. I personally find the idea of being a Christian Zionist to be fundamentally contradictory. It is, in fact. They'll call that racist, even though it's just an obvious point to show you that they are contradictory when you just barely brush past the surface. And the truth is, I think people like Pompeo know that. They don't want you to know that. Here is Haaretz literally telling you, yeah, six people killed, no big deal. Six different war crimes, it's all good because Iran bad guy, didn't you know? Nothing about this makes it legal. Again, as I continue to point out, even if every single thing they say about Iran is correct, it would still be a war crime. It would still be a violation of international law. Why is it that Israel's government can just blithely violate international law with no repercussions, even if what they're saying is correct? You need to understand that. Everyone out there arguing, well, Iran was there. That doesn't make it a legal act. They're breaking the rules as often as they possibly can. Because, and by the way, I forgot to point out that both of these attacks, guess what? As I'm talking about Mike Pompeo, guess who was in Israel when this happened? Mike Pompeo. Isn't that great? I love how Mike Pompeo seems to spend more time in Israel than he does in the United States. Seems like every time he goes there, we see an attack on the United, or on by Israel on U.S. government agenda areas like Syria or any. I mean, think about this. I think the last three times Pompeo has been in Israel, which is just odd how routinely he goes there, we've seen attacks on locations from Israel. And the argument I would say is because they think that that gives them cover. And it truly does at the end of the day, because the U.S. isn't saying a word. Syria is claiming they intercepted the barrage of most of these missiles, which they tend to do. But it says they intercepted the missiles over western province of Hama, Syrian state TV said, citing a military statement. It says the barrage of missiles were directed from the north of the Lebanese city of Tripoli. So again, here's a report seeming to claim that this came from inside Lebanon, but Israeli, which would argue the elite that would claim the illegal air, the violation of their airspace, which happens every time, which shouldn't be a shock at all. They described it as an Israeli aggression. But you won't hear a word about this from the mainstream media. Now, to make a point, because this is what I got from I would say half the people that commented in regard to the other side of this would say, well, why aren't you reporting on the Russian strikes in Syria? Well, let me make a very quick point about why that's a ridiculous fallacy. It's an argument that does not make sense. First of all, let's spoon feed you into this if you're paying attention out there, who, you know, not you guys in the chat, but the other people that are constantly screaming about things they don't understand. Russia is allowed to be in Syria. Russia was invited to be in Syria by the Syrian government. So when they bomb an area, they're allowed to. Pretty simple, huh? Funny how that works. But when Israel jumps in and bombs things, they're not allowed to, regardless of what they say and regardless of whether they say is true or not. It doesn't even matter. What they're doing is a crime. Now, Russia is bombing Idlib because the Syrian government is also involved with this effort to rid the area of the U.S., Israeli, Turkish-backed terrorists. Daesh al-Islam, Al-Qaeda in general, Hayat al-Sham, these are terrorist organizations that have been verifiably linked to Turkey, the United States, and Israel. From the beginning of this whole thing, they brought them in from Libya and elsewhere and started this whole thing. They lied about Assad and the protest, just like they did in Venezuela and got caught. Just like they did in Bolivia and got caught. Just like they do everywhere, except Syria was one of the ones that actually squeaked by. They lied about it. They were the ones they were proven to be the ones that actually shot civilians, blamed it on Assad. So they created the chaos, used it to overthrow them, created false flags, or tried to overthrow them. So here we're staring at Russia continuing to bomb a illegally occupied area of Syria. So how can any honest person pretend that this is the same as this? If my screen wants to, of course, freeze on us when we're going. You cannot argue that Russia bombing Syria is the same as Israel bombing Syria. It is not the same thing. But nonetheless, the point is, guys, that we do report this all the time. Well, of course, we've been a little bit focused on COVID-19, and rightly so. But this is all they can do, is just try to pivot to somewhere else. Now, look, even if Russia, like, even if I only reported on Syria bombing them, that doesn't mean that if you believe Russia's acts were a crime, let's say, reporting on one and not the other doesn't make one of them not a crime. It's just frustrating how it's like pointing out anybody else because they don't want you to focus on the crimes of Israel. This is the same thing. Or this is the crime at the end of the day. You're illegally attacking a country you have no right to be in or bombing, and Russia is aiding the rightful government, whether you think their acts are legitimate or not. Freezing on me, of course. But we'll get a few more points on foreign policy before we move forward. The thing that disgusts me about this whole process is that it continues to happen. Now, and politics are more important than human lives. Right? So all these people that are so sanctimoniously bleeding about all the refugees, oh, this over here, oh, look at these people. And then the moment it comes down to any government or effort that basically is working with the U.S. government, Yemen, Palestine, Venezuela, any of them, you don't talk about it, right? You don't focus on it unless you can demonize the government there. That's just flagrant hypocrisy. And you know what's the worst about it is all the people that are on Twitter that are blindly parroting all this stuff. I argue a lot of them know that, right? So you could say right there that they feel the lives of Palestinians are just less important than the lives of whatever other person they were just talking about, because one you care about and one you pretend's not happening. But this is what it all boils down to, Iran. It's all focused on Iran. This is the whole point. As Netanyahu has openly said this and openly stated that he wants to start a war with Iran before Trump leaves, Netanyahu hints military action against Iran is now on the table. That's what all of this is being built towards. The actions in Syria, the actions, because remember, their argument is Iran's in Syria. Their argument is Hamas is Iran. And these are ridiculous, baseless, unverified arguments that make no sense when you dig past the surface. Are there ideological similarities? Obviously. And do they support one another? Yes. But to argue that they are simply proxies is just an ignorant argument that they keep flip-flopping on, especially in places like Yemen with the Houthis, where one day they're proxies, the other day they're not, because they're trying to sell the Saudi narrative. The next day they are, because they're trying to blame Iran. And they just lie and flip back and forth. All of this is tailored towards creating the justification to go after Iran, which was, clearly, one of their last on the list. Netanyahu hints. In a speech on Wednesday, Netanyahu hinted that military action against Iran was on the table. Quote, "We will not allow Iran to acquire nuclear weapons." Oh, wait, are we still there? Didn't the IAEA just tell us that they were doing what they... Yeah, they did. But who cares? Because Netanyahu's been stating that same old thing for 2 decades. And the U.S. just keeps going along with it. Why? Because people who don't know the ins and outs blindly go along with it. Every single time we go over this, it's ridiculously clear that both JCPOA is completely intact, other than the U.S. government leaving, and Iran's actions are allowable. Article 26 and 36, they're allowed to do what they're doing, and the IAEA has repeatedly stated that. They're not violating anything. They're not even close. They're like 80% shy of even being close to making the material needed to maybe make a weapon, let alone being able to, because they haven't. But as long as Netanyahu continues to parrot the idea that we're going to stop them from doing this thing that they're not even close to doing, and that they're openly stating they're not, will never try to, because it goes against their religion. You could say they're lying, sure. But how about we prove something just once? Our policy is clear, he says, and consistent. Whoever tries to harm us will suffer a crushing blow. Of course, right? Because the argument is their actions will eventually maybe harm us, so we're going to attack them now. All they have to do is insinuate that Iran is about to do something, and the U.S. government has already shown that it will act on its behalf. Bolton did it with the limpet mines and the drone, and all that stuff was based on an allegation by Israel that Iran was doing something, and all it was moving their own boats in their own ports. That was proven. And where did that lead? To chaos. Same thing. All they have to do is insinuate, and seemingly their lapdog governments jump to. Netanyahu's comments come amid heightened tensions in the region and after Iranian scientist Mossadegh Fakhradizeh was killed in an apparent Israeli plot. Not apparent. Israel assassinated the scientist. And so this is the point. So they murder a scientist, which they've done numerous times before. Then they act like Iran is the one that they have to attack again because Iran's about to attack. At what point is Israel ever accountable for its actions? Understand, if they murder a scientist, Iran is, by the rules of war, allowed to respond. But because Iran bad guy, it doesn't matter. And that is the illogical nature of this whole process every single time. And that's what they're doing now. They're saying, well, he was killed. And since the death, Israel's been hyping the threat of Iranian attacks. Why? Because they have a right to respond to your illegal action. It says, despite Iran's clear desire to avoid military confrontation. And they've been very clear about that because they have hopes that they can make some kind of a deal with Biden. But because Netanyahu's desperate to use Trump, who has been one of the most pro-Israel, aggressive towards Iran, and just seeming pro-neocon agendas since he got in, they want to use him before he leaves. It says Netanyahu mentioned Israel's campaign in Syria. Quote, we will continue to act against attempts by Iran and his proxies to establish military base in Syria. Oh, you mean that entirely legal thing that you have no right to stop? Yeah. Why does nobody care about this kind of stuff? At what point did anybody verify anything that they're proving about Iran? None of it. You don't just get to label them bad guy and say they can't be in a place that they're allied with. But that's what's happening right in front of you. And they're saying, we just won't allow that totally normal thing that we have no right to stop and that the UN continues to say is allowable. We will not compromise on this issue, meaning we're openly a criminal government. We are openly, we will not compromise on our criminal acts. It says, while Iran has a small presence in Syria, it is greatly overblown by Israel to justify airstrikes in the country. Exactly. They're allies. So clearly they have a presence, ideologically allied with some of the people on the ground, but they are not running. Well, look, I'm not even this. I don't know, as a matter of fact, that there's not some proxy forces running around. I don't think so because I've never proven that. I have never been able to establish a verifiable in the past. Yes, there were. Now, no, not in my opinion, but there could be. The point regardless is that it's not illegal. Israeli troops train and shoot off missiles in Alaska. So does that make them a proxy of the United States? Some might argue, but it's probably the other way around. But the point at the end of the day is that it's not the right argument because it doesn't apply. Despite constant Israeli airstrikes in Syria, any retaliation by Syria would almost certainly be blamed on Iran. Exactly. Regardless of due diligence, any presence of proof or evidence of any kind. Because the narrative has been set. The narrative is what matters, not the facts. So when something happens, it'll be pointed at Iran, like every other time. Pompeo won't be able to put his hamburger down before he screams about Iran being responsible. That's what's going to happen. And of course, as we saw, Donald Trump came right out with this with no verification of anything. A couple of weird rockets that clearly have English writing on them that says, our embassy in Baghdad got hit Sunday by several rockets, which, by the way, was the same thing. That I argue this is the same narrative that's happening in Gaza. Every time we have claims of rockets, which seem to do no real damage other than the one time that they said that, I take that back. The one time prior to the time Iran retaliated, which is what caused that damage. There still was just a bunch of explosions around the sides. The point is, every time they say, look, they're Katyusha rockets, and look, they ran and they flee and they left the truck they came in with rockets loaded. So it means they chose not to fire the last ones and somehow chose to run away instead of drive their truck away. Yeah, sounds like a classic U.S. PSYOP, their classic fumbling effort. At the end of the day, regardless of whether that's true or not, we know that one of the only groups that actually has access to these rockets in the area is ISIS. No reason the PMU or Iran would use these Soviet-era rockets with no guidance. It's absurd. And I'm talking about Katyushas, by the way. In this case, we're talking about things that are just being aimed at Iran and saying, look, it's from Iran. No evidence, just statements. And there's no reason why. It says, Iran had nothing to do with this, according to Robert. These small attacks happen all the time, committed by countless groups, some of which hate Iran, which I'll make a point in a moment. What happened to ending the wars? And you wonder what Iraqis hate you after they voted for you to leave and you still remain. Because democracy, right? Well, Trump is now threatening Iran over the attack that they've never even proven was actually Iran. Because it's about the narrative, not the facts. Trump's accusation followed Secretary of Mike Pompeo, who blamed the attack on Iran-backed militias, of course. Iran denied the charge and has made it clear that in recent weeks that they have no interest in provoking the U.S. and even warned militias in Iraq not to fire, which, of course, they could have made a show of making that the case so they could secretly do it. Again, anything's possible, but how about we prove it? Right? We're all conspiracy theorists now, apparently, even as the people who used to be conspiracy theorists are the only one pointing to facts anymore. Isn't that funny? If we can't prove they're responsible, you don't just get to float the idea and bomb people. That's what Pompeo and Trump and Israel and all these people are doing. Making statements and acting on them without any responsibility or accountability. That's not what we're supposed to be as a country, whether we even were in regard to the government. I thought we were supposed to be the righteous, the good one, right? Showing the world, leading the world, and showing them how we should be. Not murdering families of people that we think are bad guys because we don't like them, because they did it to us. What are we, in kindergarten? We're dealing with people's lives here. An Iranian general delivered the message to Iraq after the report said President Trump reviewed options to attack an Iranian nuclear site. But some Shia militias in Iraq rejected their warning. Iran reached out and said, do not do anything. But the leader of the Shia militia, of this specific one, Asiab al-Ahak, responded sharply in Iran's warning. Quote, it says, the Americans occupy our country, not yours. We will not listen to you anymore because your motives are 100% nationalist. And this is the point, is these are people that are Iraqis. Despite the Iranians' clear desire to avoid a military confrontation with the U.S. before Trump leaves office, the tripwire is set. And any U.S. casualty between now and January 20th will, of course, be blamed on Iran, with no evidence of any kind. According to a report from Reuters, the U.S. could already be preparing a military response right now. Now, January 3rd marks the one-year anniversary of the illegal assassination of Qasem Soleimani, who was killed alongside Iraqi militia leader Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis, part of the PMU. The series of events that led to the assassination was sparked by a rocket attack on a base in Kirkuk, Iraq, which you remember probably, that killed a U.S. contractor on December 27th. Which, by the way, who was technically an Iraqi who became recently, right? This was a wild misrepresentation. They wanted you to think a U.S. military personnel had been killed. This was not what, and I'm not even, the point is this was an Iraqi national, if I remember correctly, who was working with the U.S. government and, of course, just recently became a U.S. national, something like this, and it was a manipulation. Arguably, it was somebody who I think was set there. The U.S. blamed the Kirkuk attack on Qatab Hezbollah, a Shia militia the U.S. sees as an Iranian proxy, which it's not. The U.S. responded to the Kirkuk attack by launching airstrikes on several Qatab Hezbollah targets, killing 25 of the group's fighters, which, by the way, at the time killed civilians, police. Not all of them are what they said they were. The airstrikes enraged many Iraqis, and protesters stormed the embassy, which they, of course, blamed on Iran, which made no sense because the PMU was just bombed in Iraq by a government that's occupying its country, and we're supposed to pretend like that's Iran? After the embassy incident, President Trump ordered the drone strike that killed Soleimani, illegally, like a straight-up terrorist act. The U.S. never substantiated the claim that Qatab Hezbollah was responsible. Think about that. They assassinated a head of state, or a prominent leader of Iran, and never even have yet to date proven what they said. That is not what honest, righteous, that is not what good people do. That is what criminals do. Now, as it says, in February, Iraqi intelligence told the New York Times that it was more likely ISIS that carried out the attack. Exactly. Which, in my opinion, probably is more likely that ISIS was told to, for very obvious reasons. We are in the age of false flags here, guys. This is the COVID illusion age, and they are constantly carrying out false flags. But listen to the point. I'm seeing this all over the place, and I wanted to point this out because I definitely think that something is happening. As she says, my son just got called back to duty. Pray for our men and women in uniform. Called back to duty? Why would that possibly be? We're in the middle of what we're told is the biggest pandemic in a century, and we're bringing people back to duty? Do you not realize the military in the beginning of this was also responsible for spreading this around, if this is actually what's happening? On top of that, we know that in 1918, that's also what happened. That General Pershing knew it was happening and didn't care. That spread this around the world. On top of that, why in the world is military agenda right now what we're even concerned about? But sure, let's send people back into duty. Asked him what he was in. He's in the army. And this is from a person who's also a veteran. Says no orders were given or he wasn't allowed to say what he was going in for. It's alarming. Very alarming to me. But before we jump on to the next topic, Donald Trump had to state that a young military man working in Afghanistan told me that elections in Afghanistan are far more secure and much better run than the USA's 2020 election. Ours, with its millions and millions of corrupt mail-in ballots, was the election of a third world country fake president. Now, in fact, I agree that there was just unbelievably obvious evidence of manipulation. But the truth is, it's from all sides. in this election in particular, it was, I think, what was predominantly shown was obviously from one side. But every single year, as I pointed out, going back as far as you can look, you find the same things. Too bad Donald Trump wasn't, I don't know, willing, able, aware to point this out before he was already being pushed out. Imagine if he had made this kind of statement when he got elected. Imagine what he could have done. Imagine what he could have done if he said, it's all an illusion. Two parties are nothing. It's all one party. Everything's cheating. They're all manipulating elections, and we're going to show it all to you. Actually change. Not just toe the line and you know, subjugate all of the patriots that would have risen up in any other circumstance and allow them to think something's going to change until you leave. Just think about how crazy it is. As I said, do you know where else the elections are more secure than the U.S., Donald Trump? In Bolivia, in Venezuela, in many places that you destabilize and financially attack because you all claimed election fraud without proving it. Funny how things work out, isn't it? And of course, I added for all those who incorrectly assume this comment means I'm saying that there was no election fraud in 2020. Here's one of the many videos I did on how obviously there was cheating, as there always is in 2020. Just think about how crazy that is, that they claimed election fraud in Bolivia, used it to overthrow the government, never proved it. They claimed election fraud in Venezuela, tried to overthrow the government four times now, never proved it. So I just find it a little bit interesting. As Trump finally loses, I mean, save for January 6th, I guess, which, you know, anything could happen. But the point is, he's saying what's what I have been telling you from the beginning. Please, people out there that believe in Donald Trump, who are feeling disenfranchised, recognize what's happening. Recognize that we were right all along. Two-party illusion, that none of it's real, and all, whether Trump believes it or not, whether Trump is who you think he is or not, if it doesn't work, doesn't that show you exactly what I'm saying? Whether or not Trump is who you think he is, that it's designed to be like this. And it won't change unless we break out of that two-party illusion. He's right. It is ridiculous. And it is broken. And it is a third world country style because that is how they want it to be. And that's how they put in these machines in other countries so they can control those too. I just wish he would have said this before or maybe been able to or knew about it before. But here we are. And to finish off, I just want to point out a positive, which I do think is a positive. President Trump vetoes the National Defense Authorization Act. 100% agree with that. I would be happy if this thing never came around again. I don't think, you know, this is something people will probably flip out about, but we do not need this right now. This is all about foreign adventurism. All of, and as well as sneaking in all kinds of things that violate your rights, you know, and as Derek Bros pointed out, the continuation of, you know, indefinite detention for Americans and surveillance of Americans, you know, those totally democracy loving concepts. But he vetoed it. Not for the reasons you might think, but he did. But it doesn't look like it's actually going to stop it. But here's what I want to point out. Both chambers of Congress passed the NDAA with well over a 2/3 majority, which is what's needed to override a presidential veto. But since President Trump has been threatening to veto the bill, Congress has planned a rare session in between Christmas and New Year's to override the veto. Isn't it funny how when it comes to, you know, money that's going to go to Israel, which is a huge part of that, as well as money going to all kinds of people around the world, you know, things that really don't benefit Americans, they'll hop to in the middle of Christmas and New Year's and get it done. But of course, when it comes down to you and things you need, we'll come back after New Year's. We'll wait. We'll give it, you know, they want to have their time too. They don't care about you. I just couldn't be more clear. But $600, though, of course, that's a different bill, but just how they care about you is the point. According to The Hill, the House is expected to hold a veto override vote on Monday. If the House overrides Trump, the Senate is expected to vote the following day, although some Republican senators could delay the vote. Now, this is interesting. It says if the vote is delayed past January 3rd, Congress will have to restart from scratch on the NDAA. God, I hope that's what happens. For the very least, it just that stretches it out a little farther. But we'll have to wait and see what happens. But I do argue that was a good thing. He made a good move, in my opinion, right there. But jumping over to Tennessee and kind of blending these together a little bit. And by the way, that took way, way longer than I wanted to in the beginning there. But recent large-scale cyber attacks have given foreign agents access to our most sensitive government and private systems. Our vulnerability is immense. Now, if you only saw that part, what would you think right there? You're probably going to think, oh, Iran or some kind of a cyber attack, right? He's talking about Nashville. So I find this very interesting that these agendas, exactly like we said, are beginning to converge. Now you've got this bombing in Nashville, which is being tied to massive cyber attacks, which are already being blamed on Iran and China and Russia and whatever else. With, by the way, nothing to verify that. Big surprise. But as this begins to converge and we realize that there's weird things happening across the country and cyber attacks are responsible and all of a sudden they attack the vaccine infrastructure or some kind of bio attack happens, it's all going to converge and it's already happening right now. Whether it's the COVID-19 technocratic, you know, control mechanism, whatever you want to call it, the surveillance and everything that's watching us right now and controlling what we're doing. Under the guise of COVID-19, understand, but that's just one of the reasons that will apply in the same way to any next thing they such as cyber attacks, or they're already saying climate change, lockdown for climate change. My point is, it won't take much for these things to all come together. I already think that this whole RV scenario is going to be leaned into in the white nationalist concept, which will be, remember, they already said white nationalists working with Iran, which is so dumb, but they're already pushing this, or working with Al Qaeda, which is just so stupid, fundamentally opposite of what they believe in, but who cares? Interesting to point that out. Now keep that in mind as we go forward, that this is clearly an interesting crossover between the foreign policy in Iran and what just happened in Nashville. Now, this is to start off with this part, just to go over quickly and maybe just refresh just in case there's new information. Investigators suggest Christmas Day explosion in Nashville may be suicide bombing. Now, that's only because they're saying they found remains, as far as I can understand it. But to me, right off the bat, there's something very suspicious about this whole thing, and I'll point it out as we go along. One of them, obviously, I mean, the fact that this is a suicide, claiming it's a suicide bombing. They're claiming that this was done, but you know, I don't want to jump. I have my points lined up. We'll go through it. But there's every part of this is odd. The timing, the location, the announcements that were made. It's odd. It says a blast that occurred on Christmas morning and also on Christmas, by the way, right? All this weird stuff seemed to happen all at the same time on a day when they aggressively didn't want you around your family. Isn't that interesting? Even at my house, I guarantee anybody, I mean, right off, this is what I should have said right in the beginning. Why in the world was a local story that didn't really expand to be the size it was until after people knew what was going on, why was it instantly a national story? Right? Why was this a national story the moment it happened before we even really knew what happened? The moment I heard about this, I mean, I'm in Tennessee. The moment this happened and I heard about this, I already saw it trending on Twitter. I saw somebody tweet out from a big account that said, the explosion in Nashville woke up the world. And it's like, what? How does that even make sense? I mean, even just to kind of jump ahead for a second, there's another explosion in Baltimore that happened on the 23rd. I'll come back and give you some context on this. Why wasn't that a national story? Way more people were hurt. I didn't hear about that. Why didn't that get pushed ever? That was bigger. It was more severe. It hurt more people, but nobody knew. Why would that be? But the difference is the moment this started, it was everywhere. People were talking about it. It was a big story. Everyone was talking about it. People were tweeting. Why? Now, yeah, it seems like it was a big blast, but there seems to be only so many people injured. Nobody was killed reportedly, except there's still, I guess, one person might be killed. Yet it was instantly a national story. That is wildly suspect to me. Now, it says a blast that occurred on Christmas morning in Nashville, Tennessee, injured at least 3 people. The Metro Nashville Police Department has launched an investigation of the incident as local officials believe the detonation was an intentional act. This is what we know about it so far. Now, if it was an intentional act, you would argue that there's a motivation behind it. It's very rare that you get the kind of narrative that they always push about, you know, the bad guy, Syria, Iran, whoever else. That they're just maniacs. Like, it's very rare that it happens that way. There's usually a motive, which you can ask any detective or police or anybody. That's usually how it goes. So in this case, were they doing this to hurt people? Doesn't seem that way, and you'll see why. Because of the time, the location, the fact that they warned people away. Or was this an attack on AT&T or infrastructure? And if that's the case, why is it being called there's so much about this that does not add up. In the early morning of Friday, gunshots were heard. Now, nobody's been able to find out where or how. There's not any evidence of that. People are wondering whether it was part of this loudspeaker that was going off. But there were reports of multiple gunshots multiple times. This is police officers responding to calls about shots being fired when they discovered a suspicious RV. Okay, so what was suspicious about it? Right, we're not getting much of that. Just they just deemed it suspicious. So at that point, they know something. If it's suspicious, they know something. An RV just sitting there is not suspicious, unless maybe it was parked halfway in the street, which it wasn't. Now, this is according to the Metro Police Chief, John Drake, a pre-recorded warning played before the explosion. Now, this, I think it'll play right here. I guess you can't. Hold on one second. Well, just listen closely. You'll be able to hear it. All it's saying is everybody in the area needs to be evacuated now. Now, that does not sound like something. I've never seen an example of a terrorist telling everybody to get away before they attacked. Doesn't make sense. So right off the bat, the fact that there's a loudspeaker saying, everybody get away, right? Warning everybody. Clearly suggests they either didn't want to hurt anybody, and it was a politically motivated act, or it was something a little more nefarious. Now understand, guys, that there is mountains of evidence of our government, our intelligence agencies, carrying out things just like this for agendas. But because the mainstream acts like that's just laughable, regardless of how many times you can prove that it's happened, people just dismiss it. But you should be allowed, and you should rightly, if you're smart enough, ask whether this might be possible, whether it in fact could have happened, that this was something that was carried out with the intention to use it for something. Now, it says in a chilling video depicting the incident, the computer-like woman's voice can be heard. It urged local residents to evacuate, saying a blast would occur in 15 minutes. Now, officers called in bomb squad specialists and went door to door, evacuating people and diverting them from the area. Now, at this point, as I understand it, this was not being told. People weren't being made aware of this. This should have been immediately reported that we knew this was going to happen and we were already evacuating people. The RV exploded at 6 a.m. outside the AT&T transmission building, which, as we know, went on to make massive data, basically blackouts in Alabama, in Tennessee. So it's interesting that this is an oddly timed thing in regard to communication, in regard to Christmas specifically, and people wanting to see their families, even though they've been told not to. Now, on top of all of it, I think that this is something that is oddly timed in regard to the change in our technology. 5G installation and so on, which is also just, oh, that's fake news before you even say 5G, fake news. Despite the fact that it's very real and Trump has already signed bills about installing 5G, and that happened during coronavirus, which, by the way, I've included so you could see that because that's an important show that got deleted from YouTube that had over 1 million views. This video had more views than any other video I've ever made, and it was deleted because they said it was fake news, because they argued I was saying 5G caused coronavirus, which I've discussed in past videos about possibilities there. I've looked at the evidence, but that's not even close to what this video was saying. It's entitled 5G bill signed into law while everyone's distracted by coronavirus. But because they didn't apparently want people to understand that, no, I wasn't claiming it was the big conspiracy theory they're using to cover things. I was stating a fact that they signed 5G legislation while nobody was paying attention. That's a big deal. So I find it interesting that we have something that seems to be tailored towards an AT&T, or just specifically towards data, towards, you know, what is being rebuilt right here now, right? This is the idea of what continues to happen around the country while nobody's paying attention. But it says 3 civilians were wounded by the blast and admitted to the hospital, according to officials. They were in stable condition. Metro Police Chief John Drake confirmed that officers found tissue near the site of the explosion, and police are now testing the tissue in order to determine whether it is human remains. Very odd. It is also unclear if the alleged remains were from someone directly near or linked to the blast or from a possible victim. So what I always find so insulting, the media will parrot these things and repeat them, and all of a sudden we have evidence of somebody's dead. But that's not been verified yet. But the media is parroting this and just saying cited by police or stated, and that becomes the fact. Twitter becomes, oh, there's been somebody killed. There's been remains found. That's all we're seeing. Remains have been found. But that's not what it's actually stating yet. There we go. That took that long, by the way. This is what I have to deal with. 5G bill signed into law while everybody was distracted with coronavirus. Good thing I said that 2 minutes ago, but wanted to make sure you saw it as it was loading. But the point is that this is an important video that you should watch that was deleted after a million views because they don't want you to know this is happening. But it says, to continue, Nashville Mayor John Cooper addressed the incident saying a blast was caused by a deliberate bomb that damaged at least 20 buildings in the area. Now, there's been apparently a pretty wide breadth of seeming structural damage. It doesn't actually seem that way when you look at the image. But with arguably so far no killings and so many injuries, why does this seem like such a big story? Why is this being spread everywhere? Why is this international news that's going on 2 days? I argue there's a reason they want this in the discussion. This is a focal point. Every time the media makes a big focal point of anything, we should ask why. But I argue that this, again, just like that other blast, more people were hurt. Why was that not a bigger story? There's something going on here. Investigators now suggest that the explosion could have been possibly a suicide bombing, right? Uh-oh, brings in ideas of terrorism. A person of interest was identified in connection with the explosion, and federal local officers searched the house for clues. The authorities told Associated Press on Saturday afternoon. That's today. Now, I'm glad for once they didn't just release people's names and make them a criminal before they even knew if they were guilty, which happens all the time. Great, great law enforcement. The FBI is leading the investigation of the attack. Of course they are. Now, it's interesting that Donald Trump has said a word about this, which is really odd. Following the mayor's address, the authorities announced the establishment of Emergency Operations Center. Of course they did. In response to an intentional bombing incident. This is a local bomb that didn't kill anybody, that doesn't seem to be... I don't understand why this is the way... This is becoming a national story. They're about to declare it a national... A statewide state of emergency. Why? What's really going on? The airspace above Nashville has been declared a national security area. Something's going on, guys, and nobody's telling us the full story, as always, and we're conspiracy theorists, as always. In the meantime, people have shared numerous videos from the area showing damage caused by the explosion. Nobody's claimed the attack. Now, I want to play something for you that I found to be really relevant here. I don't know about you, but I've never seen a video of or anything, of a bomb or an RV or a car or anything, announcing that it was going to do what it did before it happened. That seems like a very obvious government kind of action. And just in that point, I found this sort of thing, and you can find 1,000 examples of this, to be quite interesting.
Find you safe by following some simple steps. Put on your face covering before you enter any shop. Sanitize your hands, as well as your trolley or basket handles, both before and after use.
All right. So to me, it screams government in every possible way. It's the kind of thing the government does, especially when they want to achieve something without actually killing people, which they might be held responsible for. I'm not saying that happened. I'm saying that we should be able to ask that question, seeing as how our government has literally done that more times than I can count. But I'm crazy, right? It doesn't matter the facts, that you can look it up and I can prove it to you right now. Simply stating the obvious that they don't like to talk about makes you crazy. Perfect for COVID world, right? But as Daniel points out, 6:30 in the morning, on a day everything was closed, no one was around, on 2nd instead of Broadway, it doesn't make any sense. Whatever the plan was, this couldn't have been it. And that's a really interesting thought. Was something supposed to happen? Remember on 9/11, for instance, there was at least two other things that went down or were stopped that they reported and then quickly covered up. George Washington Bridge, and that was not part of the story anymore, or any number of things. Something else was happening, just like now, and I wonder whether this was supposed to be something like that. Just a thought, not saying I have proof, just considering the facts and want you to ask these questions for yourself, because something tells me there's something off about this story. Now, as I said, Tennessee governor is asking Trump for emergency declaration. Now, the governor of Tennessee asking for a declaration of emergency after a explosion in Nashville. Why would you declare a statewide emergency if we don't even know what happened yet? They haven't even figured out, at least what they're telling us, by the way, what actually happened or whether this was actually an intentional attack. Flights were grounded. Of course, 911 services were down. Doesn't that seem familiar to you? Right? Talking about Carbine 911 and the Israeli government agenda to basically control all the 911 call centers. And that's not a conspiracy theory. That's an open, that's openly stated, and it's already happening in Rhode Island. They're openly doing this. They're using a foreign company tied to Unit 8200 to dispatch your 911 call centers from the U.S. Of course, and the point is their whole agenda, as Whitney and I have talked about, is pointing out how these things are archaic and we need to update them and make them new and interconnected and, you know, Internet of Things and 5G and all that. As well as, you know, surveillance and covering and making sure we have all the access to all of your calls and information. But nah, just that's a side point. But when they show that they're continuing to have issues like they did in Pennsylvania and other places, well, perfect. That's why we need Carbine 911, don't you know? Amid widespread communication outages. Now, this also points out, and this thing, the outages continue into today. No timeline for restoration. Just open-ended. You may never be able to talk to your family again. It says the impacts are widespread, including calls, texts. I wasn't saying that seriously. Obviously, I was being facetious by the way that they're reporting it. Are widespread, including calls, texts, internet, television, credit card systems. I mean, really? I wonder if they're going to rebuild these things back better. What do you think? Early Saturday morning, the company said they've brought in two portable cell sites into downtown and are deploying numerous other portable sites across Middle Tennessee. How much you want to bet these things are built back with 5G or built back with something new or all of it? Credit card systems, the television, internet, all these things are put back or reestablished in a way that has something to do with the Great Reset, with the new direction, with the technocratic revolution, with, I don't know, more surveillance at the very least. But I'm crazy, right? As usual. FBI is now actively spotted at a Nashville home, suggesting that they have somebody they're looking at. But again, as I said, I'm glad that this isn't being stated. I mean, but here's what's really ridiculous, is they're in front of somebody's home. There are people, I bet, already who know who that person is, who are already stating, this person's probably the killer, whatever. It's just frustrating how bad that always seems to go. But FFA have designated skies over Nashville a national defense airspace. I mean, it's just, that doesn't make any sense to me. How in the world, unless they're trying to make the picture that there's something more going on here, a bigger agenda, state actors maybe. It certainly seems that there's much more, and they're trying to build the idea that there's more going on here. You don't designate airspace, national defense airspace, if it's just some bombing in an RV. That doesn't make any sense. But I'm sure we're going to find out shortly when they want us to know. But back to the other point. How is it that less than 2 days before, you can have 21 injured, 9 of them critically, in an explosion at a Baltimore building? And nothing's reported. Now, my point being is not that they later found out. Well, but they're saying natural gas was not involved. So it seems like it's still sort of up in the air. But let's just say they found out that it was just a random thing because of somebody's stove. My point was, when this started, it was not an instantly trending story on Twitter. When Tennessee's story started, the moment that I saw it, because I'm in Tennessee, I already saw it trending third on Twitter. That's crazy. That means that there's something driving this engine to make sure this story is the focal point on Christmas and going forward. I just want to know why. Streets. Now, here's another example, by the way, of another RV. But in Cincinnati, that was happening simultaneously. They were, oh no, another suspicious RV was spotted, which seemed really odd to me. Was it just because there was an RV? And if that was the case, why weren't they being spotted everywhere? Because RVs are literally everywhere right now. Why didn't we get multiple reports of, I don't know, we only got this other one in Cincinnati. But don't worry, they said there was no threat. Seemed really odd to me. As well as the fact that there was a person who crashed in his car on the same day, same time, who had a rocket launcher in the back of his car. Could have been random, who knows? Or there could have been something going on that didn't happen. Multiple actions around the country. Who ultimately knows? But here's what I said. I wanted to point this out. I found this to be a little bit interesting. This Airbnb of the RV industry is seeing sales explode during COVID-19 pandemic. A little bit of possible predictive programming. At the end of the day, whether it's not, is or not, I found interesting is how this would impact the perception of RVs in general going forward. Understand, guys, that RVs have, in fact, the use of them have exploded, for lack of a better word, because people are losing their homes. People are being driven from what they're used to, and so they can't afford their normal bills, so they go and get an RV. Which, by the way, doesn't seem to align with Agenda 21, Agenda 2030. It seems to be the other direction. So maybe this is a way to demonize the concept or make them... I mean, think about the idea if now going forward, RVs are seen as white supremacist or dangerous or suspicious. Certainly, I guarantee you've already seen a change in the how many people are buying RVs. So when you're looking at things like this, realize that the idea has, in a way, demonized them already. So, why? It's hard to say. But I feel pretty strongly that there's every reason to be asking certain questions. The idea that, as The Guardian themselves said, but they wouldn't dare to say today because it's far too on the nose right now, government agents directly involved in most high-profile U.S. terror plots. Yeah, this, the thing that I always tell you, which is 100% verifiable, as it says, nearly all of the highest profile domestic terrorism plots in the United States since 9/11, which is, by the way, the beginning of this rise of the biosecurity state and everything else that we don't want in this country, featured the direct involvement, that's a quote, of the government agents or informants, according to a new report. It says some of the controversial sting operations, this is what's important, were proposed or even led by those informants, meaning that the FBI created and then drove the agenda with a couple of people they were carrying along and then blamed it on them. Now, sure, they went along with it, but would they have done it if they weren't driven to it or incentivized to do so with money or whatever else? There's been examples of them trying to manipulate handicapped kids. You know, like I believe this one was in, I think it was 617. Handicapped kid to try to get him to bike. I can go off on 100 different examples. The point is that they continually do this. And at the end of the day, the worst ones have shown that they were going to drive this person to do it just so they could catch them. And it's so clear that they were so uncomfortable and they were only doing it because they wanted a friend or because they wanted to be liked or how, and they were manipulating them to do it. There was a guy that they claim was going to bomb a parade, I believe it was even on Christmas, with remote control cars. The entire thing was designed by the FBI. It was their plan. They decided to use the cars. All they did was to get this guy to say he was going to do it. And he didn't even do it. He backed away at the last minute and said, you know what? I can't do this. And they still arrested him and charged him for the crime. Didn't even happen. And it was only because he was planning it, but he didn't even plan it. The FBI did. This is the kind of thing we need to understand about the FBI and our government. Bordering on entrapment? Yeah, that is entrapment. Yet the courtroom obstacles to proving entrapment are significant, which is why they do that. Horrifying. But as they're pointing out, almost all terror plots are created by the FBI as part of its business model. What is the business of the FBI? Extracting tax. What does it need to do that? A stable threat. Probably real terrorists are sporadic and make FBI look weak. Solution? Make them. According to the Business Insider from the 2016 edition, the FBI is, quote, manufacturing terrorism cases on a greater scale than ever before. But please, don't think about this in regard to what currently just happened. The FBI has ramped up its use of sting operations in terrorism cases, dispatching undercover agents to pose as jihadists and ensnare Americans suspected of backing ISIS, aka the Islamic State, Daesh, or ISIL. On Thursday, roughly 67%, and it's higher than that from, according to the New York Times and numerous entities, 67% of prosecutions involving suspected, oh, that's why it's just ISIS supporters, include evidence from undercover operations, according to the New York Times. The reality is that upwards of 90% of the cases involve, as they stated in the other article, agents or informants that were leading or proposed the entire concept of what happened. So were they even going to happen at all? So as we're staring at this really weird story that has weird government hallmarks and unexplained timing and everything about it, one of the first things we should ask is whether or not it actually happened. And that's not being a conspiracy theory. That is using facts and evidence and precedent to make your decision. I didn't say blindly state that it is, a false flag. I said, think about it. Consider it. Ask questions. Be responsible. Because that's the last thing they expect of you today. But on that note, let's switch over to do some COVID stuff. See, that was an hour and a half. See, so I'm probably going to switch this up tomorrow. I'm probably going to re-release the first part as its own and the second part again. But let's get into some COVID stuff because I've got some really important stuff to get into. Some really important stuff. I'm going to start with the thing I just talked about in case you guys didn't see it. I actually had a great show. This one, I believe I talked with, I'm trying to remember who the last one. I know I just did a show with Jason Burmes. And I put out a show today with Spiro on Rockfin for my Rockfin exclusive. And I believe we touched on this as well. But I believe there was somebody else. But in any case, as I said, I was, and this is funny, I was on the 24th, I was just talking about how crazy this was. And then on the 25th, I saw it actually happen in front of me. And so I had to do a quick show on it. But as I said, I was just talking about this. This is straight up Orwellian. But we can trust them with our health though, right? And here's the point. As they say, you might not have seen, they're changing the definition of herd immunity. As it says, when a population is immune either through vaccination or immunity developed through previous infection. That is from the WHO. Now understand, they didn't find new information. They didn't suddenly have a new study. They're changing the definition and arguing that it never was like that before. Now it says herd immunity, also known as population immunity, which I've never said that before, is a concept used for vaccination in which a population can be protected from a certain virus if a threshold of vaccination is reached. Now, right even there, you could argue maybe there still are, you know, they just want it to be vaccination focused. But no, they had to go out and say point blank, herd immunity is achieved by protecting people from a virus, not exposing them to it. That goes against everything we've ever known, including, by the way, it's stated everywhere still that that's not the case. Here's something about chickenpox from Medline Plus. It says very clearly about chickenpox. You have immunity if you've had chickenpox before or have had a chickenpox vaccine. So is that fake news? No, it's because that is the facts that they are just trying to rewrite right now in real time. If you have immunity, it means you can't get chickenpox. Exactly. Which is exactly how I have never gotten chickenpox again because I had it when I was a kid, never got a vaccine for it. Never got it again, despite being around kids that did, because I have immunity to it. That's how it works. Here is an interesting article about just that point. Did Fauci just admit that he lied about herd immunity to trick Americans into vaccine? Now, the headline might be a little bit deceiving to some people because it's actually the opposite of the way you think, but it doesn't change the fact that he lied about this. He lied because, like, this is called lying for your truth. That is, if you believe he thinks he's being honest. Like if he, like the point being that if his truth is actually something he believes is true or he's lying just to lie, right? The difference between just straight up lying and lying for your truth is that you believe you're doing a good thing by lying for your truth because you believe that that truth is actually what needs to happen. So lying for it is still a means to an end to do a good thing. That's a ridiculous argument. You're still being dishonest. You're still lying. That's what I argue that happens with people that are in, you know, one side or the other in two-party illusion, as they're willing to lie about it as long as they get you looking at what they think is true. That's stupid. So here is Fauci doing just that. Whether he's just lying or lying for his truth, he's lying to you. It says an issue is the percentage of the population which must require resistance to the coronavirus through infection or vaccination in order for the disease to disappear. Now, early into the pandemic, Fauci repeatedly claimed 60 to 70% herd immunity, which we all remember. And that was required to achieve herd immunity. Now, beginning around a month ago, Fauci estimated he started suddenly said 70, 75%. More recently, 70, 80, 85%. Now, when asked about it, Fauci essentially said he lied for political purposes due to vaccine skeptics. This is his statement. In a telephone interview the next day, Dr. Fauci acknowledged that he had slowly but deliberately been moving the goalposts. He's doing so, he said, partly based on new science and partly on his gut feeling that the country is finally ready to hear what he really thinks. Hard as it may be to hear, he said, he believes that it may take closer to 90% immunity to bring virus to a halt, almost as much as is needed to stop the measles outbreak. So he lied about 70%. Why? Because he thought if he said 90%, that it would scare people away from getting the vaccine. He's right. So he lied to you. He lied to you because he wanted you to do what he wanted you to do, which is get a vaccine. Now, it doesn't matter whether you agree with him or not. That is not honest. That's deception for whatever reason. And that is not who we should be listening to. This is the guy who's already said he lied to us about masks for whatever reason, which I argue he was telling the truth about the mask, and now he's lying. Regardless, he's lying to us. And this is twice that he's admitted to being openly dishonest for his own agenda, whether you agree with that agenda or not. That's crazy. The point being is that Americans do, I mean, look, if they're telling us we need to get 90% of you vaccinated, people are going to freak out. That's basically saying mandatory, that we're not going to, we have to get everybody to get it. 70%, 60%, yeah, okay, I'm not worried because I'll be on the other half. It's deception. And with polls now suggesting more Americans are willing to take the vaccines, Fauci, who said in November COVID-19 won't be a pandemic for much longer, says he's ready to come clean. Quote, when polls only said about half of all Americans would take a vaccine, I was saying herd immunity would be 70-75%, he said, adding then, when newer surveys said 60% or more would take it, I thought, I can nudge this a bit, and he went to 80-85. So, lying to you. Is that any different than anything else? Is it a quirky lie? No, he's lying. He's being dishonest. He is deceiving you. Now, while they're also, remember, this is they're the ones now telling you, no, it's only through vaccines. Here's the New York Times from, this is yesterday, yeah, the 24th. Here's what the New York Times has to say. How much herd immunity is enough? Right? This is the New York Times, who is clearly on their side in this argument. Here's what they say right in the beginning. At what point does a country achieve herd immunity? What portion of the population must acquire resistance to the coronavirus? Either through infection or vaccination. Uh-oh, I guess the New York Times didn't get the memo about the Orwellian change they were doing. My point to showing you this is that this is the case. This has always been the case. Now, again, if they were arguing they discovered something new and they're evolving their perception, that would be one thing. But they are actually acting like this other side of this side of it never existed. But we know that's not true because everybody even the mainstream continues to say this because it's basic and it's always been that way because that's the premise for why vaccines work to begin with. But all they're trying to do is revamp your perception of vaccines to only genetically modifying new mRNA, DNA style vaccines that are dangerous. Now, here's how it started. And there's to point out that it's even bigger than this one was showing, the last one. This is where it is now, as of Christmas. It's just going, it's building and building, and they're adding new information. As far as I can tell now, when you try to just look up herd immunity, now they bunch in like 11 other topics in there. Oh, here's herd immunity, here's this and here's that, making it more complicated to find, I argue. There's a reason for that. There's always an effort to try to control the way you understand that things are happening, right? If they can get you to think that they're just evolving with new information, such as with the mask discussion, well, they can get you to effectively ignore everything that's in front of you, effectively get you to ignore your actual common sense. As long as they say, we just discovered something new in the middle of a pandemic. Well, here's an example of how they quote unquote discover something new. Here's the CDC website in regard to the Tuskegee experiments. You know, that wildly relevant discussion of how they tested unwitting Americans. Here's the website. This page is currently under review by the CDC to ensure the content is accurate and verifiable. What? Do you realize this has been the same for a really long time? The reason this is being adjusted Orwellian style is because this is a horrible stain on the record of the U.S. government. They illegally and deceitfully tricked these people, lied to them, tested syphilis on them, and caused lifetimes and generations of damage. But no, don't consider that into the current situation in regard to how and possibly why a government might do this, our government might do this, and, you know, test things on us like right now. No, we're going to alter it to say, well, we just finally discovered today that that was always a fake news story. In any case, we don't know how it's going to end up because they're now reviewing it. But don't worry, because we have it saved for when they do, so we can make sure we go back and review what parts they changed. Because I can promise you, it's going to be the parts you think. Pretty alarming, guys. We're in a really alarming Orwellian new Brave New World style here, where they're just actively changing things in real time and acting like it's for your best interest as you lose more and more and more autonomy. But also, I want to point out how absurd it is, the response of people online. This just really unnerves me to see how, so this guy, this is somebody else pointing out the change in the herd immunity picture. This person says, look at the CDC website. They're rewriting the Tuskegee experiment page and simply links to the page where it shows you that it's happening, right? Pretty simple. He didn't say anything other than what is literally happening. They are rewriting that page. Didn't say because they're going to add fake news or because they're going to try to trick us or put microchips in our blood. Nothing. Just they're doing it. And that's, here's the link. This is what this guy did. Okay, buddy. Ooh, tinfoil high. You're so, what is wrong with people? He literally stated an obvious fact. And because I guess this guy's assuming that he's suggesting what that guy thought he was, which I guess he assumed was a conspiracy theory, he just shares this weird gif of Alex Jones. I mean, people are so ready to just reflexively dismiss anything they've already been trained to think is not real as a mainstream media story that they'll just laugh at anything. Like if you talk about chemtrails today, half the people on Twitter will laugh at you. That's literally openly happening right now. Our own government has stated why they're now doing it, but they'll still pretend you're crazy because they've been trained to. Do you remember the NSA spying when that was a crazy conspiracy theory and all the bootlickers out there were happy to scream at you and say you were a crazy conspiracy theorist right up until it literally was proven. And even still, they'll act like you're crazy. It's just, I don't understand the motivation of people like this. Thank you, this, whatever your name is right there, for pointing out a fact and braving the cesspool that is Twitter to point out the truth. Now, on another more important story here that I think is very important. This is a bulletin from the World Health Organization. This is from 2011. I want you guys to really digest and hear what this has to say. Now, think about what this, how important this is as we go through it in regard to where we currently are. This is about H1N1. You know, the same one that we continue to point out that's been a, that's in 2009. I always mix up 9 and 7. I'm thinking about the pandemic that wasn't in any case. H1N1. It's the pandemic that wasn't. It didn't happen. And the WHO continued to pretend it did for a really long time. But here's 2011. Take a listen to what this has to say. And please recognize how it relates to where we are. The repeated pandemic health scares caused by the avian H5N1 and the H1N1 human influenza virus are part of a culture of fear. Worst case thinking replaced balanced risk assessment. Damn if that's not exactly where we are now. This is from the WHO. Worst case thinking replaced balanced risk assessment. Just like now. Okay, so erring on the side of caution, we're going to shut down the entire country. Right? Worst case, we don't know. It may get worse. We don't know. There may be asymptomatic, so we're going to lock everyone in their homes. That's exactly what that sentence says. Worst case thinking replaced balanced risk assessment. You destroyed everyone's lives for the hypothetical concern of something that clearly is not the case now. And they're too desperate to let go, to focus. They will not let go of the power they just gained. Worst case thinking is motivated by the belief that the danger we face is so overwhelmingly catastrophic that we must act immediately, just where we are now. Rather than wait for information, we need a preemptive strike. Perfect. But if resources buy lives, wasting resources wastes lives. The precautionary stocking of largely useless antivirals and the irrational vaccination policies against an unusually benign H1N1 virus wasted many billions of euros and eroded the trust of the public and health officials. You're damn right it did. Now, you understand, guys, that the World Health Organization, up until, I believe, 2010, was continuing to shout down anybody that claimed this wasn't a pandemic. This is them admitting they were wrong, or at least not saying I was wrong, but floating the idea that is true. That this didn't really happen. And that exactly like they say, understand that if I said this is my opinion on YouTube, they would delete it. And they probably will anyway. This is the WHO saying this. the precautionary stocking of largely useless antivirals, and the irrational vaccination policies against unusually benign H1N1 wasted your money. That's the facts. So why can't we consider if right now we're watching another irrational vaccination policy based on the hype? Don't remember that this happened the same way then. People thought this was happening. We were in a pandemic. Oh my gosh, we got to get vaccinated. This is so serious. Yeah, it wasn't literally happening right in front of us here, but I don't think it is here either. Right now, I don't think what's happening here, what we're being told, is actually what's happening. I really don't. The pandemic policy was never informed by evidence, but by fear of worst case scenarios. So if the World Health Organization is stating that in 2011, why can't we apply that logic now? Seems like a pretty basic question. In both pandemics of fear, the exaggerated claims of a severe public health threat stemmed primarily from disease advocacy by influenza experts, just like right now. In the highly competitive market of health governance, the struggle for attention, budgets, and grants is fierce. Right, so money guides the direction. The pharmaceutical industry and the media only reacted to this welcome boon. Exactly. We therefore need fewer, not more, pandemic preparedness plans or definitions. So this is, I argue, when they pushed these people out and replaced them with people more in the line with the, you know, Gates and Klauses of the world. Because this statement is clearly not from the WHO we're seeing right now. It says vertical influenza planning in the face of speculative catastrophes is a recipe for repeated waste of resources and health scares induced by influenza experts with vested interest in exaggeration. Are you serious? But you can't even utter these words today. But the WHO says it about itself. What a crazy clown world that we're in. It says there is no reason for expecting any upcoming pandemic to be worse than the mild ones of 1957 or 1968. Excuse me? I guess they changed that immediately when they started listening to the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, huh? No reason for striking preemptively, no reason for believing that a proportional and balanced response would risk lives. But that's not what you're hearing now. The opposite of preemptive strikes against worst-case scenarios are adaptive strategies that respond to emerging diseases of any nature based on the evidence of observed virulence and the effectiveness of control measures. Right, the opposite of what they're doing now. Now, such as, you know, lockdowns, masks, things that are clearly not working. This requires more generic capacity for disease surveillance, problem identification, risk assessment, risk communication, and healthcare response. Right? In no way am I arguing that we need them to continue to surveil us. But this, nonetheless, is what they're saying at the time. Such strengthened general capacity can respond to all health emergencies, not just influenza. Resources are scarce and need to be allocated to many competing priorities. But right now, we're living in the biosecurity state. Every resource has been centered around this now, the opposite of what they argued. Scientific evidence on resource allocation is best handled by generalists with a comprehensive view on health. Right? Not the very, very clearly focused biomedical industry, I guess, would be the right word for it, but the people like Moncef Slaoui, the Matt Hepburns, the people that are wildly focused on the future of where this is going, they say, right? The bioimplantables, the nanotechnology. Scientific evidence, and that's the last thing that we should be wanting right now. Scientific evidence on resource allocation is best handled by generalists. That's what they're saying, with a comprehensive view on health, not people that have a vested interest in one specific part of medicine and then driving us there because it benefits them. God, that doesn't make any sense at all, right? Disease experts wish to capture public attention and sway resource allocation decisions in favor of the disease of their interest. Exactly. God, it's crazy. This is just crazy to see it written so plainly, and we can't even talk about this today. We referred previously to the principles of guidance on health by the British National Institute of Health and Clinical Excellence, cited as, quote, "We make independent decisions in an open, transparent way based on the best available evidence and including input from experts and interested parties. Support from disease experts is crucial in delivering opinion, scholarly advice, and evidence to a team of independent general scientists." Right? We're getting none of that. We're not getting difference of opinions of experts from either side. No, we're getting a stated narrative that's only towed by the people they allow to talk. That's it. And if you have a different opinion, you won't be allowed to talk. And we don't have even close to independent general scientists. Not even close. We've got people that are allowed to speak because they already have a certain state of mind, period. But this team should independently propose, it says, decisions to policymakers and be held accountable for them. No, we have policymakers telling our scientists and doctors what they need to do, and only the ones that blindly follow the orders are the ones that are claimed to be experts. The key to responsible policymaking is not bureaucracy, but accountability and independence from interest groups. The literal opposite of where we are right now. Interest groups are what's driving this engine in every possible way, whether it's pharmaceutical interests, whether it's, you know, the multiple Israeli government interest in multiple types of cybersecurity and cyber warfare. And I mean, I could go on and on. Or any number of technocratic style thing, whether we're talking about 5G, whether we're talking about surveillance or contact tracing, right? There's all kinds of, or immunity passports. All these interest groups are very clearly involved. That's why we talk about the public-private partnerships, because our government's essentially running these programs, but because they're private partner or public-private partnerships, we have no accountability. We can't look at them. We can't FOIA request them. We can't ask anything. The government has effectively outsourced its government operations. Decisions must be based on adaptive responses to emerging problems, not on definitions. You know how perfectly stated that is? Right? As we're watching them change the definitions. WHO should learn to be nice, it says, accountable for reasonableness in a process of openness. This is the definition they just changed. How perfect is it that they're pointing out that exact point? That they are basing it on definitions, not adaptive responses to emerging problems. Really crazy. I'm sure I'll bring this up again. I'm sure I'll see this on a bunch of other shows tomorrow, but it's important for us to continue to realize that this is the truth and that they've been cultivated and changed over the years. Here's another discussion from a similar standpoint, and I actually just saw this before I went live. I'm going to dig into this more. It's only so many pages, but it's important just to read the understanding understand the same point. WHO and pandemic flu conspiracies. It says key scientists advising the WHO on planning for an influenza pandemic had done paid work for pharmaceutical firms and stood to gain from the guidance that they wrote. These conflicts of interest have never been publicly disclosed by the WHO. Until now, obviously. For instance, we're talking about this is the BMJ, British Medical Journal. This week marks the first anniversary of the official declaration of the influenza H1N1 pandemic. You mean the pandemic that wasn't in 2009? Yeah, that one. And we find out because they only now, or at least when this was released, because the WHO refused to let this information get seen, we find out that the people that led the guidance to that had paid work for the pharmaceutical firms that stood to gain from it. And that's why it wasn't real. But the WHO doubled down and lied and attacked people and kept selling the narrative. But we can't act if that's happening today. What is wrong with everybody? How can we not have the courage to see how clearly we have the right to see or ask even whether or not it's happening again? Oh, and something that Whitney Webb just shared with me the other day, just as a side point here, that I think her and I might talk about, and then one of these, I believe I'm having her on Tuesday to talk about a lot of stuff. CIA organized fake vaccination drive to get Osama bin Laden's family DNA. Just to make sure you understand that this is something that they have they will manipulate anything to achieve their agendas. Just something to think about. And another point before we move on to the next topic here. This is something was shared by Robin Monati. The fear of transmission is the problem, not COVID-19, which can be treated. According to them, quote, we were intubating sick patients very early, not for the patient's benefit, but in order to control the epidemic. That sounds horrible. Hospitals retreat from the early COVID treatment and return to basics. Now, the first thing that I think when I hear this, why did they stop the basics to begin with? Right? So if they're going back to what they should have been doing in the beginning, who gave the direction to do what they did during the beginning? And why did they suddenly decide to do that? Based on nothing? On a new situation they'd never seen before? Seems a little suspect, doesn't it? And you'll see more as we read through this. December 20th. Doctors are treating a new flood of critically ill coronavirus patients according to them, with treatments from before the pandemic. Right. Understand that right now, a critically ill coronavirus patient could be somebody who has a very severe bacterial pneumonia and got a PCR test that told them they had coronavirus, and that's a very ill coronavirus patient. It could be somebody dying from any number of severe issues that gets a PCR test that tells them they have coronavirus, and they just deem it coronavirus because that wildly faulty test tells them that it is. And as long as they've got symptoms to go along with it, they'll claim it's COVID-19. That is openly stated. That's exactly why the epidemic that wasn't, that I always point out lately, because it's important in this topic, is a good reference point. Because again, as I always point out in this discussion, they also used the PCR test, and it led to them creating what they call the epidemic that wasn't, a whooping cough epidemic that didn't happen. 8 months this went on, where they claimed they had this epidemic. Not a single case was found, but they locked things down. They shut people off. They closed hospitals. They made vaccines and antibiotics, and it all led back to the PCR test. It is a molecular test that, until recently, was confined to molecular biology laboratories. And they continue to state that this will continue to be a problem. That they needed. This says, my guess is that what happened at Dartmouth is going to become more common. Well, you're damn right, Dr. Pearl. But nobody cared to point that out. So now we're using it again, even though it caused things like this in the past. And we're acting like it's beyond, you cannot claim that it doesn't work. Period. That's conspiracy theory, according to the mainstream media. Gosh darn it, this thing freezes like crazy on me lately. But we know if this is possible. If the PCR test can create an 8-month-long epidemic that never happened, based on the doctors thinking they're doing the right thing, right? And that's not to assume that all these doctors that are doing the right thing. I argue a lot of them are doing what they think is politically correct. But the argument being, finally stops, that all of these people are just toeing the line. Because they know that, especially today, whether it's scientists or doctors or anybody, that if you do not toe the political line, that you will get attacked. Now, doctors are treating this new flood of critically ill coronavirus patients. With treatments from before the pandemic to keep more patients alive and send them home sooner. So if the treatments they should have done that we're doing before this started is currently keeping more patients alive and staying them home sooner, why did it take 10 months for them to, one, realize that, and two, why did it happen at all? Last spring, with less known about the disease, okay, so there was less known back then, doctors often preemptively put patients on ventilators or gave powerful sedatives, largely abandoned in recent years. So before the coronavirus, they stopped doing that. And because this started, and with less information, they decided to do the thing they stopped doing? How does that in any way make sense? It says the aim was to save the severely ill and protect hospital staff. Seems like a contradictory, like saving the hospital staff and saving the seriously ill seem like contradictory things for the most part. But you could make the argument that if they get sick, they can't help people. But at the end of the day, their job is putting themselves at risk to help sick people, arguably. But so the point being, they decided to do something they hadn't done in years based on something that they didn't know anything about. Let's keep going. Now hospital treatment for the most critically ill looks more like it did before the pandemic. Okay, so they're now saying that they were wrong in what they did? No, they won't state that, but that's what that means. Doctors hold off longer before placing patients on ventilators, even though they're still doing it, despite seemingly 90% of people that being on them in general seem to die faster, as they even said themselves generally. It says patients get less powerful sedatives, with doctors checking more frequently to see if they halt the drugs entirely and dialing back how much air ventilators push into patients' lungs with each breath. Let's go back to basics, he said. The less you deviate it from, the better. So why did you deviate it from the beginning at all? Nobody's addressing this. It says advances also include new drugs, most notably steroids, for several ill patients. Right. You know, so the thing that people have been pointing out from the beginning, that the media was calling fake news? Yeah, exactly. But the fact that they changed away from the common practice of things, in fact, they changed because it wasn't working before COVID-19, and then started doing those things again doesn't make sense and seems like a choice that actively led to the death of a lot of people. So whoever made that decision, I think, should be pointed out. It says, last spring, doctors put patients on ventilators partly to limit contagion at a time when was less clear how the virus spread. So they were putting them on something that was beneficial to them and not the patient. That's what that says. When protective masks and gowns were in short supply. So they didn't have masks and gowns. So they made the choice to intubate people when it wasn't necessarily when they should be intubated in order to make sure that they were safe. Am I misunderstanding that? Doctors could have employed other kinds of breathing support devices, but don't require risky sedation. Okay, so they could have done something else that doesn't require heavy sedation that could hurt people, but early reports suggested patients using them could spray dangerous amounts of virus into the air, and Theodore Iwasha is critical care physician at University of Michigan Department of Veteran Affairs Hospitals. I should have seen that. So that's what this guy said. But so based on a unverified claim, right, that they could breathe. So instead of putting on protective equipment and gearing up and making sure that that wouldn't affect them, according to what they tell us, right, masks and everything, you're good. It'll stop viruses, according to them, even though that's not true, but that's their narrative. So if they could gear up, put on hazmat suits. But no, they didn't. They just did what they normally did and instead aggressively intubated people when they didn't need it and put them on heavy sedation to keep them safe. This feels really wrong to me, because it is. It says, at the time, he said doctors and nurses feared the virus would spread through hospitals. We were intubating sick patients very early. Get this. Not for the patient's benefit, but in order to control the epidemic and to save other patients, according to an unverified claim that has never been. I mean, that's crazy. That's not how medicine is supposed to work. You don't get scared about claims and then do medical treatments to keep you safe. That's disgusting. But this is clearly where. But these are heroes, though. Don't forget, they're all heroes, no matter what. That's crazy to me. And yeah, of course, that felt awful. It should feel awful because you probably killed a lot of people. It says, as a safety precaution, doctors and hospitals limited the access of healthcare workers to coronavirus patients on ventilators, giving them fewer opportunities to check on them. Okay, so you intubated them earlier than they needed in a more aggressive fashion with higher sedation and then didn't check on them as often. That seems like a guaranteed recipe to kill people, because that's what happened. It says that meant patients required more powerful sedatives to keep them from pulling out the throat tubes. Sedation increases risk of delirium, and delirium increases the likelihood of long-term confusion and death. But sure, just sedate them like crazy to keep yourself safe. Okay, so the point is, these people went in there with a PCR test that said they were sick with some symptoms, and they got aggressively sedated and put on intubators, and they probably never woke up again. At least in some cases, I know as a matter of fact that happened. Based on a false positive in some cases. Think about how gross that is. And this is based on the protection of them, not the person that went in there to get treatment. Now it says, when the pandemic first overwhelmed hospitals in China and Italy, doctors questioned whether COVID-19 would require new treatment approaches. Okay, so the point is, right when this started, they didn't know. They didn't know whether it would need something new. And they did it anyway. They said, remember that thing we stopped doing a few months ago that was dangerous? Let's do that, because we don't know anything about COVID-19. Heavily sedate them, force them on intubation for our protection, because that totally lines up. It says better understanding of severely ill coronavirus patients in respiratory distress had increased confidence that they are similar enough to patients with other infections to rely on pre-pandemic guidelines. So the point being, they did the wrong thing based on a seemingly no information, because it was better for them and hurt people. And then once they realized that it was just like they were doing before, they went back to what they were doing before. And nobody's being held accountable for this aggressive act that killed a lot of people. And by the way, Dr. Riedel came out right at the beginning and said this. We are intubating people, and this, I don't know, I forget exactly how he said it. That I think what we're treating is not what we're trying to treat, or however he said it. And he got attacked for that. He's right. And they're admitting that he was right. And he still got attacked for it. He probably lost his job, for all I know. Advent Health Central Florida use computers to select treatments options. Get this. And for COVID-19 patients, the system added options to calibrate ventilators using longstanding protocols. So are they actually saying that because of this computer model is why they decided to gate. I mean, who's in control of the computer? Who's in control of the models? Who's entering the data that drives it forward? Who is responsible for this obvious criminal malfeasance? Nobody, apparently. Just a quirky accident that killed a lot of people. But it was for their benefit, right? So it was safe. Got to save those heroes. I mean, guys, this is like a firefighter. Like, how? What's the best way to say this? So they're doing, I mean, this is like a firefighter spraying himself off with a hose instead of the house. Right? I mean, it's, let the house burn down because I might burn down. I might get hurt. You sign up to be a firefighter, you know you're going to put your life at risk. Now, that's not necessarily what a hospital worker would do, but you know you're putting yourself in sometimes situations where there's potential risk. That's the job. Now, the argument was this is such a dangerous pandemic that we have to do this. And that's what the propaganda, the politics, even influenced the medical treatment. How sickening is that? Now, we know, despite all of the lies, manipulations, deceptions, complete Orwellian transformations of entire discussions, that the vaccine is rushing out. More than 4.2 million people have gotten this experimental, wildly rushed, and mostly untested injection. 4.2 million people with a genetically altering vaccine that I can't even call a vaccine, technically. Over almost 2 million people in the United States, as I understand it. And this is technically still being tested. How in the world have we allowed this again? 1976, anthrax, 2009, H1N1, and, you know, like another 13 examples we could point out where they manipulated, lied, cheated, pushed things, tested on Americans without telling them. But yeah, let's just let this happen yet again because politics. Meanwhile, CDC issues guidelines after reports of allergic reactions to COVID-19. Again, on and on this goes. Allergic reactions are happening, and even though they were warned about exactly this, a Boston doctor says he almost had to be intubated, which might have killed him, after suffering severe allergic reaction from Moderna COVID vaccine. And this is what, Mrs. Meanwhile, we're not allowed to pretend like this is dangerous, as we're just getting this rush of clearly dangerous things happening. Why? Because it's dangerous. Because it wasn't tested properly. It wasn't tested on animals, which is a very important part of this. And no, I'm not arguing that I agree with animal testing. I don't know where that came from. Somebody commented that. I'm not saying that should happen. What I'm saying is in the normal process of testing a vaccine, whether I like it or not, that is a normal process. That's a part of it. Do I want there to be testing at all? No, I don't think, at the end of the day, it should be your choice whether you get vaccinated or not in any way. I don't think animals should ever be tested on. But if they're going to force you to do this or they're going to claim that it's safe and they haven't done one of the things that they did, that's worth pointing out, right? See the logic there? I'm not saying I want it to happen. What I'm saying is it's important to point out that it didn't happen because that is a huge important part in regard to finding out the way that it interacts with our bodies. They didn't do that. Now, Spiro was actually just connecting me with Dr. Lyons Wheeler, who I played a while back, because he has very important stuff to talk about in regard to pathogenic priming and the dangerous isotopes he talks about in regard to how this thing could potentially end up attacking your body. 70% of people will have reactions to this PEG, which could essentially turn this thing in on yourself. And by the way, there's examples of it already happening in the past. The dengue fever vaccine that Fauci worked on that killed 600 children. The different coronavirus vaccines that actually caused the pathogenic priming, which hurt people when they got introduced with the actual wild virus more so than before they got the vaccine. All these things are very possible. And yet, we're not even allowed to talk about it as these things continue to roll out. Here is an interesting discussion coming from Miami researchers and University of Miami. They're telling you, freeze your sperm before COVID vaccine to protect fertility. Researcher at the University of Miami have recommended that you have your fertility evaluation before you receive the vaccine. That's crazy. This isn't some fringe conspiracy theory website. This is the University of Miami. And to consider the freeze your sperm before it just in case. But yeah, just go ahead and get it anyway. Just rush out and get it. Just why not? Be a good citizen, huh? It's the point is, guys, they've already stated they don't know. Because they didn't do a certain test, they don't know if it'll affect your fertility. They don't know a lot about this thing because they didn't properly test it. And you know what? That's probably why this happened. Probably why Fauci, clearly, in my opinion, seems to have not gotten the vaccine. I can't prove that because he could have just tapped the wrong arm. But what I want to point out here, first of all, is to recognize that his hairline clearly is opposite, is the same, right? So the point is, what people are arguing is that the screen got flipped, which does happen like on Zoom calls and so on. But his hairline is the same, as well as the background symbols and so on. And no, multiple things people have already pointed out. So what happens is, I think, obviously what happened here. Of course it does.
But nothing to be bothering or distracting me. Went to bed years. I felt a little bit achy, but nothing to be bothering or distracting me. Went to bed last night, had a good night's sleep, woke up to...
You gotta be kidding me.
This morning, the only thing I have is just the...
Okay, so that's the point right there. So you can clearly see his left arm being injected, and he's tapping his right. Hairline's the same. That's what's important. It's very obvious, right? So nonetheless, guys, oops, I don't want to lose that link so I can share it with you guys. I mean, look, the point is, this happens every time. Regardless, there's examples every time of people getting this thing, saying they got it and it turns out they didn't, and they all will give it to him again tomorrow, right? That nurse that already got it, and they said, well, we just gave it to him again today anyway. Well, don't worry, that's not a risk. That's such an obvious manipulation. The video of that obvious injection that didn't happen is a flagrant insult, and even mainstream media pointed it out. I mean, all it took was to look at the person before him and the person after him. The syringe was very different. It was empty, and the plunger was all the way down. So there's cases of this already happening. And the point is, I think there's some people on this line that are very aware, at the very least, of the uncertainty around this. But it's best for the plebs, right? It's best for all the peons. Make sure all you sickly people out there with your poor families, make sure you get this thing to keep us safe, or whatever they may think, or maybe much more nefarious, as I probably think. But as well as that, we have examples of this kind of horrific thing continue to happen, as Richard Willett points out, dangerous and against even Pfizer's own doctor's notes. I'm starting to believe that none of these doctors are real, and I maybe agree with that. This is another pregnant healthcare worker. I got vaccinated to protect my little one in my belly. To protect. Like, this is, again, despite, as he points out, despite even Pfizer's doctors saying you shouldn't do this because we haven't tested it, we don't know what will happen. This is, as somebody points out in the bottom, somebody comments, they basically just say, hey, wish you best of luck with your experiment, right? You are experimenting with your child's life to make a virtue signaling point of political standing. That's disgusting. You should be ashamed of yourself. And I won't go over it all again. I went over it last time and showed you point blank on the Pfizer documents that shows you what it says about how dangerous it is in regard to what they don't know in regard to both being pregnant as well as lactating and any number of things. They don't know. And if history is any indication, you just put your child at risk in a very severe way. Good luck to you. Here is what Society of Obstetricians and Gynecologists of Canada has to say. This is crazy. This is, again, despite Pfizer and other group pointing out they don't know how this will affect your child because they didn't test for it. For individuals who are at high risk of infection and or morbidity from COVID-19, it is their position that the documented risk of not getting this vaccine. Anybody want to point out where there's any such documented risk of not getting this vaccine? That is a wildly Orwellian statement, because we don't know what hasn't happened yet, right? We don't know what people who haven't gotten it have even gone through, because we haven't gotten there yet. That's a very confusing way to say that. Right? A year from now? Well, yeah, we'll be able to look back and say, well, here's documented possible risks. Who knows what? Well, I don't think that'll happen, but that's when it would happen, when you can look back. We don't know what it's just so irritating that this is where we are. These are people that are being parroted and shared, and they're saying something as stupid as that. The documented risk? Their argument is because we guarantee know that vaccines are best no matter what, and if you say anything otherwise, you're an anti-vax conspiracy theorist, right? The gospel of vaccines, that's what they're pointing out. They're good no matter what. That's stupid. I mean, that's just straight up ignorant. But they're saying that completely undocumented risk outweighs the theorized, undescribed risk of being vaccinated during pregnancy. Are you kidding me? Like, so we already know the general side effects, whether or not you're pregnant. That's not theorized. That's not undescribed. They don't even know how much worse it will be if you're pregnant. What if it has lasting effects on your child? There's no such thing as a documented risk of not getting something. It hasn't happened yet. But sure, go ahead and manipulate women into getting a vaccine that they have not tested on pregnant women that is completely rushed and dangerous and experimental. That's never, ever been done before until now. How horrifying that we're here where virtue signaling is more important than facts. And now, as I continue to say, remember that if you watch this show, I said this more than once before we got here. Just like with the flu vaccine, they claim, oh, it changes every year. We need new vaccines. Which, by the way, seems to undercut the entire logic of why vaccines work at all, but who cares? It's only about profit. Continue to circle around. But leading virologists concerned new strains of COVID could make vaccines ineffective. Exactly. So I think it was in a way that, as I say before, they tend to step on their previous lies, right? So what happened here is, well, people aren't scared anymore. People are realizing we're lying. So we need to throw in a couple of fake new strains that are based on more Imperial College manipulations from people like Neil Ferguson, which is what happened. That's responsible for the UK lockdown before Christmas, despite the fact that the group agreed they shouldn't do anything. But Johnson chose to listen to Neil Ferguson, despite being catastrophically wrong about the beginning. Who cares, though, right? Let's use another discredited person and just continue to push forward the lockdowns. So the point is, they say, well, new strains, be afraid, and then go, oops, wait a minute, doesn't that challenge the need for the vaccine? That's what definitely is being stated, but of course the media is saying, no, don't worry about that. It may be ineffective, it might not work at all, but just take it anyway. That's literally what we're seeing today. And this is the tweet they're referencing right here. He says, two leading virologists, one in the UK and the United States, tell me this mutation won't be the last and worry about a change that fundamentally alters the virus structure, making the vaccine in progress ineffective. Reverting back to animals, then re-emerging in humans is one concern. I mean, all the, again, for those that are of the belief that doesn't exist, which is certainly based on some facts in regard to the FDA and the CDC stating that it hasn't been isolated, they haven't met Koch's postulates. I say it every time. Maybe thinking to yourself, well, that's a way to get people to believe it's real, and it's certainly true, certainly possible. My point in showing you this is to realize that now it seems there's conflicting narratives even from within the mainstream push, right? If their dangerous new strains are undercutting the need for this, why would we still get the vaccine? It's quite interesting, isn't it? Well, remember this before I go forward. This is exactly what they're saying now, and they're doing it again. They're telling us right now that we don't know whether this is effective. This was before it even happened, that we won't stop transmission and blah, blah, blah. Now we have new strains that might make it even less effective at all. It might not even work in any way. But just go ahead and all the media today, all of them are saying, but take it anyway. Just go ahead and do it anyway because danger. That doesn't make any sense whatsoever. And this is what they did in the 60s. It's not new at all.
We dug up this clip. Melissa found this clip online somewhere. I could not believe it. This is a sensational, ridiculous, repugnant clip because they just say these things with a straight face, with no reaction, and then they balance them out with just equal time of regurgitated propaganda about how great vaccines are, how good the government is, and how much they're trying to protect you, and especially children.
Today, doctors at the Federal Communicable Disease Center acknowledge the flu vaccine and the recommended dosage is ineffective. While in a larger dose, it can be harmful. However, the flu vaccine is still recommended for old people and the chronically ill.
Right here, they just admit that the government continues to push and propagate vaccines, tell you you have to take them, you should take them, you're a bad person if you don't. Even though they admit that these vaccines are ineffective, they admit that they suppressed reports from scientists who found that they were ineffective. They wouldn't publish these studies for over a decade.
Last month, a Senate subcommittee headed by Abraham Ribicoff charged that the federal government wasn't doing a good enough job of informing the public about ineffective vaccines.
Scientists at the Division of Biologic Standards test vaccines for their potency and safety before licensing them for public use. However, the division does not determine the effectiveness of the vaccine. That is left to the manufacturers. A case in point is the influenza vaccine. Four scientists in charge of work on the flu vaccine during the 1960s found it to be ineffective, said they refused to give it to their own families. Two were transferred to other work, a third left the division. and over the entire 10-year period, not one word of their unfavorable findings was allowed to be published.
And worse, they admit that they continued to administer the vaccines even when they knew they had a cancer agent contaminant in them.
But a more serious case involving the relationship between the leaders of the division and their scientists involves the adenovirus vaccine, a vaccine given to thousands of American soldiers to prevent certain cold-like symptoms. When it was shown that the vaccine contained a contaminant which caused cancer in laboratory animals, it was taken off the market.
Did you hear that? Let's play it again.
That the vaccine contained a contaminant which caused cancer.
Did you hear that? They admitted that these vaccines have a cancer-causing agent. They knew about it, and the government sat on this information.
But that was 3 years after the division's own scientists had pointed out the danger. Dr. Murray justifies the use of the vaccine by saying it took 3 years to examine the evidence against it.
It was more important to use the vaccines than to take them off the market and remove the agent.
And they were still administering it to the soldiers and saying it was just more important to give out the vaccines than to not vaccinate.
It was more important to use the vaccines than to take them off the market and remove the agent. But since the agent couldn't be removed, there was no other course.
Still administering it to the soldiers.
Thus, for 3 years, American troops were injected with a cold-preventing vaccine, which was causing cancer in laboratory animals.
And the most incredible part, did they find about it just now in this 1971 TV clip? No. These newspaper articles show that they knew about this at least in 1965. That's how long it took them to tell the public and how long it took them to get it out of the vaccines. And that's how long it went on for. And right here, the microbiologist, who's actually a nun, in an article that says nothing to worry about, there's no connection here, admits that the agent inside of the adenovirus has been found to be cancer-causing in animals, and more so that it's worse and creates kind of a more deadly combination when it's combined with a certain other agent, which just so happens to be SV40, the exact cancer-causing agent that was accidentally found in previous vaccines that were administered to millions and millions of people in the polio vaccine in the largest ever government push to have a population vaccinated. And they found this stuff. They knew this stuff was in there. Just imagine what happens for anyone who got a tainted batch of this adeno vaccine as well as a tainted batch of the polio vaccine containing SV40. If this article is correct, anyone who got both vaccines would theoretically be at a much higher risk for getting cancer, because in the animal studies it was found that it was definitely worse when both of these were present.
It's just incredible. And then remember the link that the image I show in the, or the video I show in the beginning, 1976. So we're not even 6 years later after they find out, or rather, you know, now we're looking back, we find out that they knowingly kept doing this when they knew it would hurt people. Just like with the anthrax vaccine, just like in 1976. 6 years later, they push out the vaccine based on something that didn't happen, as you saw in the beginning. Not a single case was shown to have happened. They knew that, pushed it anyway. And the worst part was not only did they push the vaccine that they said they tested, they switched it out last second for something that was never tested, that they knew in the literature would cause the problems that it ended up causing. They're testing on you, just like every time in the past, and they know this. I mean, how many times do we need to see this example before we begin to ask these questions?
But certainly this is critical new information. The World Health Organization discussed this on Tuesday, that the new variant includes 14 key new mutations, and that new critical laboratory investigations are required. And in fact, Pfizer and Moderna are doing new investigations. New evidence is being looked at to determine if the vaccine is indeed going to protect us.
Now, this is what I said last time I saw this story. Right when this first came around, I can promise you they're going to come out and say, don't worry, it's all good. But are we really going to believe that they found out that this thing applies after that short period of time, when it took them all this time to even make this successfully work? I doubt if they're ever even able to figure, I mean, it's all going to be what they want us to believe. Just like when they swapped it out in 76 for something that was totally untested, why would we trust them now? True. I mean, and we also point out in the True Stream Media point, how he discusses the idea of how these things converge with other acts, other entities, or excuse me, other ingredients. And it just sounds exactly like the kind of thing we're talking about with all these other examples of past issues that they just don't want us talking about. They don't even want us pretending that these things are possible. All of this stuff is here in front of you. This is something that is, at the very least, should not be taken now. I argue that something that should never be taken because these people do not have your interest in mind. History is right there for you to look at. I don't know why you would think it's any different today. But, of course, the point is all of this is building towards the control, right? Whether it's because there's something they want you to get from this thing or however you want to look at it, the point, I think that whether it's just multiple things or just this next part, I definitely think that this is something that is a key part of this whole agenda. It all builds towards controlling your movements and surveilling you based on whether or not you had this vaccine. Right? And by the way, even if you've had it, remember, you're surveilled for 24 months to make sure that you don't get the side effects they never tested for to begin with. Right? So then every American is, do you think it's going to end after 24 months? Why would they do that? You've been surveilled. You're used to it for 2 years. They won't even know it's there after 2 years. Every American is going to be surveilled, and everyone else who doesn't get this is going to have to be restricted and prove that they have this vaccine to be able to go to a store, to go on a plane, to ride a bus, to do any of these things. And it's already happening. Daily Mail, firms start work on freedom passports. Documents would allow people who have tested negative for COVID to enter pubs, schools. And of course, it starts with the test and becomes the vaccine once that becomes widely pushed. It's been everywhere. They're already stating this. And remember, we've talked about the Bar Association in New York already claiming that they stated this will be mandatory, but that's not the government, but, you know, specifically the bar. But now New York is pondering literally mandatory vaccines if herd immunity fails, which is exactly what I said from the very beginning. That's why that was pushed. And that's why they're altering the definition, because it's all about achieving the goal. Because I would argue right now, if this thing is what we're told, which that's a big if. And if it's, I strongly believe if that's the case, that it was circulating all the way back in 2019, as all the other evidence shows in basically every other country, that means that everybody, if it is what we're told, has the herd immunity already, has immunity, because that's how this works. But they want you to believe it's only through vaccines. That's why they're changing it. And so now they're going to say, well, we didn't reach it because not enough people got it. It's your fault. And then they're going to make it mandatory. Or at least that's what New York is pondering. But remember when that thing was a total fake news story that was laughable? That's never going to happen. Here they're literally discussing bills, pushing things, legislation forward, openly telling us that's a possibility. And they'll still call you a crazy conspiracy theorist. New normal arrives. Singapore Airlines launched COVID-19 digital passports. Yeah, not considering it, not thinking about it down the line, not making legislation. They are literally launching their digital passports. You know, that fake news story that's never going to happen. You now have to prove that you have... Either in this case, I believe this still is using negative tests. It says 4 months readers. I read this earlier, but I'll make sure I'm not incorrect. Yeah, it says the airline explains passengers will take COVID-19 tests at local, just take local tests and then have to prove with QR codes that you have immunity, that you have either the test or the vaccine. And the point is all these things, as they state themselves, will eventually become the vaccine. That's how these are being built, because the test is not as invasive. So it'll be starting there and it will go forward. And that's what they're telling us. It's a vaccine passport, according to Singapore Airlines. That's what this is talking about. As well as the United States itself is now requiring negative tests for people from the UK, despite the fact that that new strain has already been shown to be wildly overblown, including by the very people who discussed this. But of course, Neil Ferguson, who was wildly wrong to begin with, is the only person we should listen to, of course. But that's the beginning. Now you have to prove your health status to be able to come into the United States from the UK. Next, it'll be the vaccine. Next, it'll be from everywhere. Next, it'll be leaving. The UK's largest testing lab suffers COVID-19 outbreak, according to Whistleblower. Now, again, this is an example of the PCR test illusion, in my opinion. As it says, Sky News reports that the outbreak... Actually, there's 2 points to this. One, I just want to make the point that... Every time we see these discussions, there's never a real discussion of how they suffered. Were they severely ill? Are they all on their last leg in the hospital? Or are they all just being told you're sick? Because look, that guy's got the sniffles. All the rest of you are asymptomatic. Everybody has to go to the hospital and we're shutting down the lab. Right? That, you know, you don't know, right? Because this is the idea is a massive outbreak and everybody assumes the worst. But we're dealing with a PCR test that is guaranteed, even according to the CDC, to give you 30% false positives. According to the New York Times, possibly 90%. The reality is, that test is not made for this, according to Carrie Mullis, who said very clearly this was not meant in regard to viruses. Yes, it was before COVID-19 existed, so we're told, but it doesn't matter because it's the logic about how it's used in regard to viruses, not just HIV. That's an aggressive mainstream media sidestep. But as it says here, Sky News reports that the outbreak has put considerable strain on the lab, which has been tasked with processing 70,000 tests per day from across the country, yet hasn't been able to achieve that number despite 12-hour shifts and cramped working conditions. So add on to the PCR test that, if done perfectly without error, still gives you a high volume of false positives. Add on top of that, the people who are doing the lab work on these tests are trying to do 70,000 a day, 12-hour shifts, and cramped working conditions. And the argument is they were so haphazard with their efforts that got them all sick. But yet we're supposed to blindly trust that the tests are completely accurate beyond reproach. Really? Like, you're telling us that even the labs are wildly overworked and not doing what they're supposed to, but yeah, still trust the tests that have false positives, whether or not they're breaking the rules? I mean, good God, this is just absurd. On top of that, another study is now showing that asymptomatic COVID cases are not, in fact, what's driving this. Remember that we talked about the major Chinese study with over 9 million people that showed almost zero prevalence of asymptomatic at all. And the asymptomatic is the illusion that's driving the claim that we need to lock down all healthy people because one person might be asymptomatic. Incredible. We have never before locked down healthy people. You are being gamed and controlled right now. Now, remember, on the point of being gamed and controlled, remember that they're very clearly telling you that this is in regard to PIC, which is pneumonia, influenza, and COVID. That's the death line. That's all it is. That's what they're showing you. And they're, oh, the spikes. Look at how different it is from 2020 and so on. But you're combining two other illnesses that could sometimes have over 100,000 deaths, depending on the year you're looking at. And that's not inflating the numbers? Now, remember that if we're only 100 plus 200,000 deaths over the last year, all said and done, and we're adding all the flu and pneumonia because it seems like they don't exist right now. You look at the CDC website, the CDC, the flu numbers are not there. I think this is the right one. Unless they just took it away. I thought, here it is, right? So here we are. Okay, there's nothing happening. However, if you want to go back a year, just for fun, take a quick peek at where we would have been at this point in time. Where was it? Right here. Look at that. Gee. it's almost like there was a lot happening last year at this same time, but not this year. I wonder why that would be. Here, let's just get a side-by-side comparison, just to make this clear. Oh, of course it's going to freeze on me for 20 minutes. You just saw it all green. It's going to pop up as I'm talking. How in the world can this be what was happening last year? And by the way, the reason I think it's that bad, which is like catastrophic, is because we had COVID-19 circulating or whatever they want to talk about. Oh, of course, I did the wrong one. Okay, here's where we are right now. Okay. And by the way, it stops at 12th. It's same thing. You can see that it's been like this the whole time. Okay. Here is where it was last year. Look at that. Guys, I mean, it's unbelievable how we can't point out that flu just doesn't exist now. Pneumonia just doesn't exist now. Obviously, we know that's not true. The point is they're combining them with the other numbers to game the situation. That's what's happening right now. It's pneumonia, influenza, and COVID. And again, back to the point, if we're only about, I mean, we're, it looks like we're on track to be 100,000 plus deaths more than last year, when all said and done, not just between September and March, like they're trying to just give you certain pockets and say, look at how many more deaths there were just between these months. That's stupid. Last year's total deaths versus this year's total deaths. That's the point. And if we're only about 100,000 over, wouldn't that mean that there's manipulation? I mean, at the end of the day, There's 100 different ways that you could argue that that is just an increase in population, that the lockdowns increased all these deaths, but at the point being, it is not even close to what they're saying it is. Period. Then you add on the false positive of the test. Then you add on the fact that they're combining two other illnesses with this and telling you that's your deaths. It's obscene how clearly they're manipulating you. Oh, just in case you wanted to add one more thing to the absurdity of all this, scientists use a lateral flow antigen rapid SARS-CoV-2 test in SARS-CoV-2 test on a kiwi fruit, and the kiwi tests positive. Not the PCR test, but the antigen test. The other one that was supposed to be the answer, which also was rushed out, which also had a very high prevalence of false positives. I've already talked about both of them. This is scientific, guys. I've shown you numerous examples of Coca-Cola. These tests are an illusion. You are being gamed. And as this person's calling it a global fraud, regardless, there's a lot of manipulation happening. If that's possible, and it is, we've already seen it proven, why do your governments not want to admit it? Power, maybe. But as Dr. Ben Tapper says, soon probably to be deleted from Twitter because, you know, they're the new doctor experts and science experts of the world, deciding what doctors get to speak on their credentials, you know, because they're deleting doctors right now on Twitter if they even say anything remotely off the path. It says, it amazes me, he says, how people have more faith in Pfizer and Moderna, maybe because Trump said they should, Moderna's vaccine, than they do the innate intelligence inside the body. And this is the point that I keep making. That same innate intelligence has a 99% success rate at fighting this virus. That's according to the CDC. There lies the elephant in the room. If the vaccine is 95% effective and your body has a 90% chance of fighting this off, what in the world are we talking about? This is, it all boils down to just having the smallest amount of common sense, the smallest amount of critical thinking versus blindly trusting authority figures, which is what they train people to be like in our school systems today. On top of that, they're just, you know, casually using the, you know, any number of offensive things to sell your vaccine. In this case, the scene of the birth of Christ to sell you a Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine. Really? They say calling it bottled hope. That's disgusting, guys. I mean, they are actively manipulating you at every possible level. And here's one last thing here before I think I have a couple more points. That I always forget how to pronounce her last name. Madej? I know I've heard it 1,000 times. I don't know why I always forget it. But she makes an excellent point. And again, a doctor who has the right to speak on these things because she's earned that right. Whether or not she's correct, understand. She says, if the synthetic code from these vaccines gets incorporated into your genome, by law, part of or all of you can be owned by the patent owners. And she says, and yes, the codes can get into the genome by reverse transcriptase enzymes. Now, look, to some, all the people who are stuck on the CNN Fox News world are going to go, that's so stupid. The same way they said immunity passports were stupid until it started happening. And even now are still saying that because they're stupid, to be honest. But at the end of the day, we're staring at this real concept that is absolutely valid. Right? I mean, I'm going to play a clip on the way out today, the one you've probably seen a bunch. This shows you that life has, that legally speaking, in multiple countries, life can be patented. And if they can prove that that's the case, I mean, it'll be a new case in general to prove that a human has that, but it's already been done with animals. So it's not a far stretch. Maybe that's the direction this is going. And by the way, this is the point. U.S. Supreme Court says that synthetic genes are patentable. Patentable. Naturally occurring genes are not. So what happens when suddenly these synthetic genes are showing up in your body? It's a good question. Something that they definitely don't want to talk about, but I'm sure we'll find out. To finish off really quickly, here's an example of a person walking alone without a mask. It's an Italian in general, but...
Ecco. Sono stato fermato perché ero senza mascherina. In una situazione di questo genere, dove non vi è assembramento, va bene? E questa per stizza, per cattiveria,
I have a different video. The bottom line is, guys, this person is walking by themselves. I just can't understand how we can argue that you're going to give somebody a sanction or a ticket or whatever because they're alone without a mask. If they're alone, they don't need social distance, right? They're not near anybody. Even by the arguments of the WHO, they don't need a mask because they are social distance. And you know, all the other actions they keep taking. So it's not about the safety. It's about compliance. It's been like that from the beginning. And every example everywhere shows you that. Here's another one. Here is Christmas arrived early in Thailand with elephants wearing, of course. Yeah, let's just jam in there a pharmaceutical drug advertisement. Everybody take notice really quickly of what controls our country. Ask your doctor about this horrible drug with thousand. I mean, every time you hear these.
If you're prone to infections, have cuts or sores, have had hepatitis B, have been treated for heart failure, or if you have persistent fever, bruising, bleeding, or paleness, don't start Enbrel if you have an infection like the flu. Enbrel.
You know what's funny? I didn't even know what that said. And look at that. I was exactly right. If you have bleeding, dying, if your eyes are falling out, maybe you should ask your doctor. Ask your doctor about this crazy drug today. Like, what in the world? That used to be illegal, by the way, and our government made sure it wasn't. Why would that be? I just heard, I never mentioned this, but my dad sent me a video of his dogs playing, or his dog and his cat playing, and in the background, there was a drug ad playing in the background, of course, because it's probably watching the news and they're funded by the pharmaceutical industry, and it said, you know, the same thing. Oh, if you've got bleeding in your eyes and you've this and that and you've got disease, you know, blah, 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 maybe you shouldn't take this drug. But go ahead and ask your doctor about it today. Find your new normal with this today. That was their ad. Find your new normal with this damaging, side effect ridden drug today. Your new normal? Everybody's capitalizing on this. Anyway, Christmas arrived early in Thailand with elephants wearing Santa hats, spreading cheer, and handing out face masks to school students. Yeah, that's what you're seeing here, as kids are grabbing totally sanitary face masks from an elephant. Good God, everything's freezing. I'm telling you, man, there is some serious weirdness going on here. Oh my good God. I mean, just to show you, Reuters, that's why it's doing that. It's Reuters, because they're getting money every time. I shouldn't give them that. Because the media is funded by the pharmaceutical industry. But yeah, look, just grab a mask. No big deal. Everyone's sticking their hands in the bag. You know, totally sanitary, right? I said, I'm sure those elephant-carried masks handled by numerous people are very sanitary. Good God. It has never been so clear that this is about compliance, not health or science. In fact, it's the opposite of both. I mean, seriously, you have elephants carrying masks where people are sticking their hands in a basket. Do you realize that doctors are saying that if you touch a mask once, that it should be discarded? People are walking around handling it all day, taking it off, sticking it in their pocket, dropping it on the ground, putting it on a table while they eat, picking it back up. I've seen all these things personally. And I'm not talking on video, in real life. And yet that's, you know, and this is causing illness. This is causing bacterial pneumonia. This is causing rashes around your face and cracked teeth and bad breath, because these are all forms of infection. See, but I'm sure the elephant carried masks are good to go, right? I mean, a doctor would laugh out loud if he saw this, but the point is, it's just about getting them to do what they're supposed to do. If it was about health, that's the last thing that would have happened. We also have doctors that are being fired after writing letters criticizing the very clearly unjust lockdowns that are actively hurting people. But of course, if you don't toe the line, you're no longer an expert and you get cast aside. Even as the evidence is proving that the lockdowns are increasing the damage and causing more than anything else. In fact, that there are not even justified. The evidence shows you that lockdowns are in fact increasing the problems. But every doctor that's big enough that chooses to say anything about this, they get ostracized. You're no longer part of the elitist circle, and you're no longer going to be allowed to be what we've given you. Everything about this narrative is an illusion, guys. Every single part of this thing. I just can't stress that enough. I've never seen something so obviously manipulative. And this last part, you might find interesting, because it's yet another example of what I would argue is just the whole gamed aspect of this. And think about the things like the media have done in the past. You know, CNN fake pretending to be in Saudi Arabia and being attacked by a gas bomb, even though they were in a studio. And it's painfully obvious today because of how fake it was. Nobody points to that now. They've lied completely about being in Saudi Arabia or the staging of sets around us. And both Fox and CNN are both equally guilty of this. Now, what you were seeing right there, and I'll play it on this back part because it was kind of a quick one. The second part is actually longer. You're seeing a room where people are on like extreme quarantine lockdown. Everybody's closed. The guy in the bed has a damn bubble around his head. Everyone in the room is locked down from head to toe. And apparently they just forgot about the person right next to them sitting with his arms crossed.
Tante ore devono essere bardati in questo modo per garantire a un'altra persona, Luciani, di poter respirare, di poter partire pian piano, essere poi in qualche maniera riportato. Ecco.
At the end of the day, guys, there's so many examples of this everywhere. CNN faking protests, you know, showing Kentucky gun ranges and claiming it's in Syria. I mean, these people are straight up frauds in every possible way. And yet they point to us as if we're fake news when the smallest misstep, as they're actively lying in every possible way, literally every time you turn on the TV. I just can't think of any. There's so many examples of how manipulated we all are. It just never ends. But now with this COVID illusion, it's really beginning to flesh out the big picture. The whole two-party illusion. The reality that all of this is keeping us yelling at each other. Even right now, screaming about the election in January 6th, all the, it's, even though this whole thing's been broken for decades. That you've never actually had the vote that you think you've had. That's my take, and I think the evidence is painfully clear. And this whole thing is showing us that yet again. But they're going to try to get you wrapped up into it again. Keep doing it just until 2024 so we can drove over Trump again. Until we realize that illusion, they'll continue to trap you back up in it every year. They're rolling out this technocratic revolution right now. And if they can just keep you focused on one side or the other, you might just let it all pass. That's what they're hoping for right now. Show them that you're smarter than that. Show them that you're aware of what's going on. And stand up and tell them that you will not allow this to happen. That you will not allow your rights to just be thrown away, taken away, discarded in front of you, and told it's for your good. I know you're smarter than that. I know that by and large, Americans out there are smarter than the way we're being depicted to the world. And I know that most of you out there are sitting here listening to this, nodding your head, but you're going to go out tomorrow and you're going to keep your head down. You're going to put your mask on because you don't want to get called out, because you still secretly think that you're in the fringe, but you're not. You're not. You're not alone. You're not alone. Everybody out there, I argue, most of us see what you see, and the vast majority of that group is just afraid to be seen and labeled as the fringe conspiracy theorist. It's time we put that to bed. We all know by now that we're conspiracy realists, right? We are watching what's happening and pointing out the reality. It doesn't mean that it's always right. Just like the mainstream gets it wrong a hell of a lot. The point is that it's right of us to ask these questions, to theorize about what might be happening, as the history has shown that they've done it over and over and over. And this show just give you a couple of the examples. I'll give you a couple more tomorrow. Hopefully you're still thinking about it. Asking questions, challenging people on their thoughts. It's about dialogue, guys, in a productive way. Because today, if somebody disagrees with you in the two-party illusion, well, they're the devil. They're the enemy, right? I mean, that's the truth. They see the other side as the end-all, be-all evil on the planet just because they believe in somebody else. And that person thinks that you're that way. I mean, it's the same thing as saying like, oh, well, you know, I'm a Christian, so I believe that only I'm going to heaven and everybody else in the world is going to hell. I am a Christian, by the way, but I don't think that makes any sense at all. The reality is that things are a bit more complex than we like to believe. And it's time for us as individuals to be grown-ups about this and realize that there's far more happening around us than we can see. Critical thinkers. That's why I appreciate you all being here every day. Thank you for being here. Thank you for asking questions and challenging the narrative. I got a bunch of good interviews coming up. Dabu7, Taylor Hudak, hopefully Lions Wheeler coming up soon. So stay tuned, guys. Plenty more coming. And I ask you right now to take the time to broaden out your social media profiles. Spear and I just talked about this today. Get away from YouTube. Go somewhere else. Go to Odyssey. Go to Rockfin. Go to BitChute. Do something else. At least use all of them. For the moment when YouTube finally gets seen for what it is, at least you'll have another presence. Thank you all for being here. I love you guys. As always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.
Today, the job of building this nation geographically is completed. There are no new frontiers within our borders. So, to what new horizons can we look now? Where are tomorrow's opportunities? What's ahead for you, for your children? The frontiers of the future are not on any map. They are in the test tubes and laboratories of the great industries.
The Jacobardi case was one of the great judicial moments in world history, and the public was totally unaware it was actually happening as the process was being engaged. General Electric and Professor Jacobardi went to the patent office with a little microbe that eats up oil spills. They said they had modified this microbe in the laboratory, and therefore it was an invention. The patent office, the U.S. government, took a look at this, quote, invention, and they said, no way. The patent statutes don't cover living things. This is not an invention. Turned down. Then General Electric and Dr. Jacobardi appealed to the U.S. Customs Court of Appeal. And to everyone's surprise, by a 3-2 decision, they overrode the patent office. We bring good things to life. And they said, this microbe looks more like a detergent or a reagent than a horse or a honeybee. I laughed because they didn't understand basic biology. It looked like a chemical to them. Had it had an antenna or eyes or wings or legs, it would never have crossed their table and been patented. Then the patent office appealed. And what the public should realize now is the patent office was very clear that you can't patent life. My organization provided the main amicus curiae brief. If you allow the patent on this microbe, we argued, it means that without any congressional guidance or public discussion, corporations will own the blueprints of life. When they made the decision, we lost by 5-4, and Chief Justice Warren Burger said, sure, some of these are big issues, but we think this is a small decision. 7 years later, the U.S. Patent Office issued a one-sentence decree. You can patent anything in the world that's alive except a full-birth human being.